show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, did you miss me? I sure did miss you. But I tell you what, by the time we got done doing what we were doing yesterday evening down in the Coal River Valley, I would not have been fit to do a radio program. And I got to tell you, I'm still processing what we finished up today. That's not to say that it wasn't a magnificent experience, because what would have made me unfit to do a radio program yesterday, it would have been simply because it was so magnificent. I have to extend my heartfelt and profound thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch for scheduling this racism and oppression seminar workshop. And for making me part of it. I'm blown away. It was a tremendous experience. With the single exception of one individual, the entire staff of Coal River Mountain Watch was there, as well as some other folks, community member, students, me. And it was mind-blowing in its scope and in its affirmation and in the way that we went about learning. I have to give huge, huge praise to our facilitator, Elandria, from the Highlander Center. Just go look up the Highlander Center and look at the amazing work that they do. The Highlander Center, of course, taught Rosa Parks to sit down and taught Martin Luther King Jr. to stand up. And they are still, many, many, many years later, teaching the same sorts of things. Teaching people in the South and in Appalachia, what it really means to invigorate a community, what it means to be an active participant, and in fact a leader in throwing the vile, tortured garbage of individual, institutional, and cultural racism onto history's ash heap, where, Lord God, it so does belong. Teaching people to confront the racism that is inherent in all of us because of the nature of where we live. Now, creeps like Tony Snow, long gone to his deserved home, could say things like, "Racism is only a memory." Racism is a memory. And it is a blood-soaked memory. And it is a hateful memory. And it is a tragic memory. But it is also a pernicious present that has to be fought with everything that we have within us. And Elandria did beautiful, beautiful work. Because it wasn't just related to issues of race. Because of that, we were able to confront all sorts of isms and all and manners of oppression. Oppression. That word is real. Able to confront that and take it out and hold it at arm's length and look at it and try to comprehend it. And to do it in a spirit of good fellowship and good humor. And to watch all those people in the room working together toward a common goal was invigorating. And, yes, exhausting. So many thanks to Alondria, many thanks to the Highlander Center, and many thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch, who are indeed the hardest working, bravest people I know, for having the foresight and the vision to bring this training, this teaching, into its midst and to allow me to be part of it. I'm just stunned. And I only came into the studio, I only got back about exactly an hour ago. So I'm sort of still reeling from it all. But I got in here, and of course, you know, you listen to the news where you can on the radio and so forth and read the newspaper. There was no time for internet surfing. But I got back, and I started reading my emails and going to the usual suspects, the sites that I rely on. And I'll be damned if there isn't a certain kismet to everything that has been the last 2 days of my life. Versus the reality I found when I came up out of that fresh and clean and cleansing experience and came back to the swamp. You know, when you're fresh and clean, that's when you resent the filth the most. There's none so blind as those who will not see. And by the same token, people mired in filth don't appreciate the fact that they're in a swamp or a cesspool. Swamps are healthy things. Back bays and bayous. I shouldn't say swamp. A cesspool. And I got back in here. I relieved Agnes from where she had been preparing to produce Mark's program, and Mark did his usual wonderful, wonderful work. And as I produced him, I sat here, like I said, perusing my sites, looking for the news, examining a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I felt freshly dirtied again. I came back out of that teaching, that training, feeling clean. Or at least that I was in the possession of a really, really solid bar of soap and a scrub brush. And lo and behold, I start opening up news stories, and I kid you not when I say that I just kinda got sick. I do not have the charity in my heart that Mark Levine does. Mark is a better man than I in that regard. I am not in a forgiving mood where Pastor Rick Warren is concerned. I'm not even in a little bit of a forgiving mood where Pastor Rick Warren is concerned. I am, in a word, disgusted, nauseated by the notion that Barack Obama, whom I have noted in the past, may just be about 12 moves ahead on the chessboard here, but not on this one. I've suggested that occasionally, we call him Obama Wan Kenobi sometimes for the means by which he is able to circumvent conventional thinking. But you know what, Obama Wan Kenobi? This is not the pastor I'm looking for. Am I to understand that there is not one single minister of the gospel, not one single rabbi, not one single imam, not one single shaman, nary the lone high priestess of the possum goddess in this country who could stand up and deliver an invocation instead of a charlatan huckster whose entire being is made of hate? Yes, 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 I too recognize that the Reverend Joseph Lowry is on the program as well. I know that. But Reverend Joseph Lowry was a got-to invite. There was no way Obama could have ignored Reverend Lowry. Just couldn't. There was no choice involved with Reverend Lowry. It would have been universally wrong. The inauguration would have been an epic fail without Reverend Lowry. But Rick Warren is a screw-up of choice. Rick Warren, his presence on the program and his place on that podium sickens me. I don't use that metaphorically. I saw the news about Rick Warren, and my stomach lurched. I felt like I was on an aircraft going through bad, bad turbulence, or maybe on a roller coaster that was longer on the downside than what I'd expected, and the rising gorge would not go away, and I felt like pretty soon it was all going to come up if there wasn't some relief. And, folks, there ain't no relief. I can't come up with words sufficient to describe the disgust I feel with Barack Obama or whatever advisor told him that inviting this fundamentalist freak to be a part of his inauguration would be a good idea. Whose idea was it? I want to know. Oh, yeah, I know. Barack Obama said we can disagree without being disagreeable. That's cute. That is a platitude. That is trite. But you know what? Rick Warren and his minions are not going to disagree without being disagreeable. I know fundamentalism, brothers and sisters. I know it from the scars that I bear on the hide of my soul. I know fundamentalism, and I know fundamentalists. And they sit around humming, "We shall not be moved. We shall not be, we shall not be moved like the tree that's planted by the water. We shall not be moved." Sorry, sing it again. In another universe or another life, I can actually carry a tune. They cannot be moved. They are what they are. And I reserve the right, when Rick Warren sinks his poisonous, venom-loaded fangs into Barack Obama somewhere within the first 100 days or the first year or two or three, I reserve the right to be behind this microphone and say to Barack Obama, why do you have that surprised expression on your face, Mr. President? You knew he was a snake when you picked him up. This is not change I can believe in, because this is not change. The only reason that's not Jerry Falwell is because Jerry Falwell is busy earning his just reward in his long home. Hey, you want a donut? Apparently, Rick Warren likes donuts. No, I'm not kidding.
It's so interesting, you know, he actually has a reputation until November of being a reconciler, somebody who brings people from different points of views together. But in November, when Proposition 8 was on the California ballot, he stood up and took a position that he was against gay marriage. And in doing so, he outraged the community that he has been courting and has taken care of with AIDS attention, you know, HIV funding. He has really reached out and created great relationships with people.
And Curry.
And so they were very hurt by his position when he came out against gay marriage. Let's take a look at what he had to say to me. How have you reconciled yourself with that pain that you've caused because of that loss of faith in you?
Well, because if that hadn't passed, the pain that would have caused to far millions more, I think, would be more severe.
You dirty, damned charlatan liar. What millions would have been caused pain by acknowledging the constitutional rights that are enjoyed by every citizen of this nation? What, Rick Warren? Would you have argued against the Equal Protection Clause or the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution because of the massive pain that it would have caused to the slave owners? You son of a bitch, self-made. You dirty, rotten bastard. And herein is the portion of the program where I recognize that I'm not putting into practice some of the teachings that I received in the last 2 days. But I can't! I am far too flawed at this point in time to be tolerant of a man who thinks that denying constitutional rights in order to prevent pain to a group of bigots somehow justifies his hate. Can't do it. And besides, the pain it would have caused to the bigots is a pain that they would have gotten over generationally. Because already, even among the evangelicals, you know, the fundamentalists, the young crowd, as was noted by Pastor Sizek, they're not into this hate. They've got gay friends. They've got gay brothers and gay sisters and gay aunts and gay uncles, gay mothers and gay fathers who are out of the closet and damned well won't go back in. And they recognize the bigotry of an old and passing generation for what it is, bigotry. So, no, that one doesn't work too well. That one doesn't work too well for me, Reverend Warren.
And here's what I see in this, Ann. For 5,000 years, every single culture and every single religion has defined marriage as a man and a woman.
Bull! Bull! Dirty, filthy, rotten, lying charlatan. Now, a little over a week ago, I whomped out the Bible and we did some reading about marriage. Remember the son of Judah who went and was staying with some one person, and then he found this other this woman, and he then lay with her and thus did marry her. Yeah. You know, that evening we didn't get around to counting up the wives and concubines of Solomon or David. Nope, didn't. Didn't get around to going through the laws of what happens if a man rapes a woman, if he doth know her, and then doesn't marry her. Shoot, that's not even a stoning offense in the Bible. And NBC is providing a forum. This guy's exploding, by the way. He's beginning to look like some sort of Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade balloon. If you shave the little hipster chin whiskers off of him, I guess he has to have that, because otherwise he just turns into Jerry Falwell. He does. He looks just like him. It's creepy as hell. I haven't gotten around to going over to Lynchburg to piss on Falwell's grave, but I'm about curious to go and see if the damn thing's still empty or still full. Sit there and watch it for 24 hours and see if Rick Warren comes out under a new moon in the still of the dark. But let's see what he says about those 5,000 years.
Every single culture and every single religion has defined marriage as a man and a woman. Not just Christianity, Judaism, Islam.
First of all, you damn moron, Islam is roughly 1,400 years old. So they don't go back 5,000 years. And Christianity's only 2,000 years old. And Judaism, Mark, you still around? How old do we acknowledge Judaism to be? I mean, I always understood that at the outside, that to the extent there's anything actually historical in, say, the Exodus, that was going on around 1400 before the BCE, before the current era. So that would make it 3,400 years. Still looking for the years 1500 BCE to 3000 BCE. Because we got to make 5,000 years out of this. And you see, within those 5,000 years, there were, don't tell him, it'll make him nuts, matriarchal societies that did not define marriage as a man and a woman. And within those 5,000 years, there are various and sundry cultures that did not have marriage between one man and one woman, but in fact clan marriages and line marriages. Some of this is hinted at even in the Bible itself, which by no stretch of the imagination goes back that far. But he gets away with telling these lies. And poor Ann Curry doesn't have the brains, the necessary brains, to challenge this rotten, lying truth raper on any of it.
Hinduism, Buddhism.
Your position has raised the specter that you are homophobic. And that is why you laugh.
Let's try this again.
But that is why people are angry. Gay people are angry. Yeah. And how is it possible for them to be so...
Yeah, who gives a damn what them gay people think? Oh, I'm laughing because I'm Richard in crisis. I don't give a damn what them gay people think. we're just still keeping them down. Oh, what a chuckle.
I can give someone you... who would maybe deny, right. Who would say, I don't like what you are.
Yeah.
You understand that.
Well, I could give you 100 gay
friends.
Are
you homophobic?
Of course not. I have always treated them with respect.
Well, what? How do you claim that you treated someone with respect when you said that they're not entitled to the same constitutional rights that you possess? Just ask it.
Come and want to talk to me, I talk to them.
When they want to come and talk to me, I talk to them. Them. You see, one of the ways that you otherize a group and marginalize them is by the use of impersonal pronouns. Language matters. The way when those people come and those people want to talk to me, I talk to those people. You see what I mean? The gay community, gay folks, homosexual people. No, we can't use the word people to describe individuals who live their lives as their creator, if they are so inclined to believe, made them. No, they're those people. Those people. You know, we had a little chat about that phrase earlier today. Those people. Phrase got used, and our facilitator stood up and said, "Let's not use that anymore." Those people. Let's don't. If you have to refer to someone, group that has dealt with oppression, that has dealt with either individual or institutional or cultural racism or genderism or regionalism or classism, let's not use those people. Let's make that a phrase that just doesn't happen for us anymore. Because it marginalizes. It delegitimizes. It dehumanizes. Those people. Well, when they came and want to talk to me, I talked to them. Yeah, but Reverend Warren, you may talk to them. But you, son of Satan, you don't hear them. And you most assuredly do not listen to them. Because you don't have to. Because they don't exist in your world. They barely have a right to breathe air as far as you're concerned. But wait! Wait. Reverend Warren's going to explain to us how it is he knows he's not homophobic.
The protesters came, we served them water and donuts.
Yeah. When the protesters came, we served them water and donuts. Well, that's settled then. Never mind just bringing him on for the inauguration. I think he needs an office in the White House. He gave donuts to gay people. Bull Connor gave water to people protesting for the same sorts of constitutional rights in Birmingham a few decades ago. Well, he just gave them water. See how it works. You're a little disgusted. You a little creeped out? No, hell no. You're a whole lot creeped out. And so am I. And frankly, I'm not going to sit here and lay out unpardonable sins or unforgivable sins. I'm not the guy who's in the sin-defining department. Above my pay grade by a long shot. But I will tell you that there is somebody in the Obama staff whose judgment I profoundly question. And if, in fact, that decision was made by Barack Obama himself, then his judgment is most assuredly subject to question. And, I see these headlines as I'm preparing for the show, and I'm going right to the phone and say, I see these headlines, and they say things like, "Liberals angry with Obama over choice of Warren," or "Progressives dismayed by Warren decision." Why? Why are you dismayed? Why are you disappointed? Who told you Barack Obama was a liberal? Who told you Barack Obama was a progressive? Who told you that? I know one group that told you that. The Republican Party told you that. Over and over. He's the most liberal member of the Senate. He's more liberal than members of the Senate who haven't even been born yet. Oh, he's a liberal. Say he's very liberal. Sunshine, they do that to speak to their own knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing base. They don't do... Barack Obama is not as liberal as any single listener to this program. Not one. Every one of you are more liberal than Barack Obama. I know, I damn sure am. And while I'm not in the ideological purity department either, that's below my pay grade, I will, as someone who works in liberal causes and advocates for liberal policies and liberal ideas that have the transformative power to change this country for the better and forever, I am comfortable sitting here and telling you that Barack Obama is not a liberal. Because you know what? Among other things, if the right wing tells me he is, that's a guarantee that he's not. It's gonna be a long time before we ever see a real liberal president. Or perhaps Obama will have some sort of road to Damascus moment when he finally understands that that baby splitting and accommodation and tricks don't constitute good policy and don't provide the relief that this nation needs. But he's no liberal. It doesn't make my disgust with his choice. You know what? If I was Jim Wallace, I would feel snubbed. Of course, Jim Wallace is probably too good a man to allow himself to feel that. But you know what? And this is important because a big deal was made over Obama's outreach and the refusal to be silenced of the liberal religious movement in this country. Every single minister who is liberal in nature, who advocates the real teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. Every single one who does that has a right to be disgusted with this and has a right to feel the hot sting of the palm of a hand across his or her face. What would have been wrong with inviting perhaps the minister at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation to do this invocation? What would have been wrong with that? That minister has seen real pain. What would have been wrong with inviting the gay Episcopal bishop from, what, New Hampshire? What would have been wrong with that? I can't think of anything being wrong with that. But I can think of a whole lot of things that would have been right with them. But no. We get a religious fundamentalist who cloaks his hatred in pop psychology terms and works every day that he draws breath to make sure that a segment of this culture remains marginalized, demonized, and dehumanized. And only because of my dedication to not completely coming unglued will I refrain from suggesting what ought to be done to Rick Warren with a red-hot poker. Okay? Let's go to the phones. See what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
But, Bob, some of my best friends are Jewish.
Huh? I know.
Well, some of my best friends are Jewish.
We gave them water and donuts on the way to the ovens.
Yeah. You know, this is like inviting, this is like appointing George Wallace to oversee the civil rights debates.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because if you can take away the civil rights of the LGBT community, what's to stop these creepers from turning around and saying, hey,
you're next.
I won't say the word. Get your ass back down on a plantation. You no longer have any rights. You're three-quarters removed.
We've got a major religion in this country that didn't acknowledge persons of color as being full human beings until 1978.
Yeah, Mormon Church.
And, of course, these are the same people who pumped $20 million into trying to keep the constitutional door closed to the gay community.
Yeah, I can tell you things about the Mormon Church to curl your hair. Thing is, there is an article that I put up on the main blog. It is about the hidden race war in New Orleans during Katrina. It is linked to an article on The Nation. People, read this. It will scare you. Well, if you're black, it'll scare you white. If you're white, it'll scare you purple.
Yep. I glanced briefly at that story, and we even had some mention of the Gulf Coast and New Orleans in the course of our processing and learning over the last couple of days. And I learned things, that astonished me.
Yeah. But, you know, this whole Warren thing, it just makes me nauseous. I don't know who the pastor is of Ebenezer Baptist, you know,
mm-hmm.
Dr. King's church.
Yeah.
What would have been wrong with him?
Yeah, and I guess Reverend Wright just didn't have a prayer, literally.
Well, yeah, well, that goes without saying, but. Is anybody going to object to the pastor from Reverend King's church? Come on.
Yeah, I know. He had lots of options.
Instead, he puts this bloody neocon in?
I know.
I mean, I was appalled.
And the thing is, it's particularly appalling, Susan, because of the, oh, I hate this word, triangulation that it shows. Well, you know, we've got one of those people for them, so we got to have us a bona fide evangelical, because we're going to bring America together. I'm sorry, maybe I'll be proven wrong, and I will be the first one to joyously eat my words. But you know what? The people who adhere to the fatwas that emanate from the filth-filled mouth of Rick Warren, they don't want to come together.
No.
They don't do kumbaya. And when you reach an olive branch to them with your outstretched hand, you will, by God, bring back a bloody stump.
Yeah, the only thing worse would have been that yahoo that stands outside of soldiers.
Oh, Fred Phelps?
Yeah, Fred Phelps.
There's not a lot of, with the exception of a little bit prettier language, there's not a hell of a lot of difference between Rick Warren and Fred Phelps. Fred Phelps might actually, you know what, when it comes right down to it, Susan, Fred Phelps might actually be a more honest man.
Yeah, he's more honest about it, but, you know, there's really no difference, not to me. And what really, you know, even the triangulation thing bothers me, because if you look at his cabinet choices and everything, where's the token lefty? Ain't one.
Oh, God, I hate tokenism.
One either.
I hate tokenism. I hate it a bunch.
Well, so do I.
I know. I'm not saying you approve of it.
Cabinet, who is a a member of the left. Not going to happen.
Nope, not going.
Now, I knew this man was a centrist from the word go, but I don't like having him come in and then kick two big blocks that help get him elected in the teeth. I mean, that shows a real callousness. And that shows change hell. He's just another politician.
Not a lot of change. Dear Leader was a big fan of Rick Warren.
Yeah.
Where's the change?
Yeah. There's no real, to me, there's, what's the change? He's doing exactly what Bush did.
Of course, you know.
The difference being, he's smarter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, he is that, Susan. He is that by a long shot.
But, you know, it's just...
More artful, too. More artful.
Yeah.
Never forget that character, the Artful Dodger.
Yeah. Did he have to pick one?
But no. Okay, let's expand that a little bit more. What is the need for a fundamentalist, dominionist, evangelical? Why? I got no inclusivity for them. They have had their hands on my neck for the last 8 years.
Yeah.
And just when I thought my trachea might pop back into place.
Right.
The bell rings again, and here come the hands.
The only thing it tells me is that the Pentecostal Baptist church is still what amounts to de facto church of the United States.
I mean, does this guy actually think that giving a gay man a donut absolves him of his hate? Does he wake up in the morning and say, well, I ain't got to worry about nothing with my creator because I gave a gay man a donut?
Yeah, that's like, you talking about Bull Connor giving the guys water. And I'm saying, yeah, through a fire hose.
Yeah, a couple of hundred pounds of pressure behind it.
I just, oh, God.
I know.
And on top of that, just to top it all off with a nice, great big red maraschino cherry. The economy is tanking. Bush is going, you mark my words, Bush will let the big three crash and we will go into a major depression. So what does Congress do? They give themselves a pay raise.
Pay raise and a break. Hey, you worked hard for that pay raise. Go on vacation now. I know. Susan, thanks a million.
Yeah, I'm going to go pound my head on the wall, I think.
Pound your head on a pillow or something. The wall, neither your skull nor the wall deserves it.
I just...
We'll talk soon.
I may end up the next presidential election. I won't vote for a Republican, but I may not, and I may end up not voting at all.
Maybe that's the message that needs to go out. You take that filthy man off of your platform, or you won't see me in 4 years. Maybe we do that. But I hate ultimatums. The guy's not even in office yet, and we're sitting here talking about ultimata.
No, I'm not. I'm not giving him an ultimatum. I'm just saying, if he keeps this up. He's not going to be somebody I want to vote for, but I won't vote for Republicans, so I'll probably just stay home.
You know, maybe the answer to this is that this is his way of proving that, you know, he's not really a closet Muslim, and maybe he can take an oath on a Bible that Rick Warren gives him. Oh, wouldn't that be warm and fuzzy?
And maybe he should grow a spine and tell the right wing to
up a rope.
Hell. Yeah. Tell them to dissolve. Because, hey, they've had their time. Yeah. Go away. Go away. You screwed everything up. You're going to end up putting us in depression by wiping out the big three. And that really ticks me off because Ford doesn't even need money. But they're going to drag him down.
Well, but there's, you know, there was another side of it, Susan, that I did do a little bit of reading about. I can't stay away from information entirely. It just so happens that the amount of bailout money that Chrysler wants is exactly the same amount of money that Cerberus Holdings paid for Chrysler.
Yeah.
Now,
I wonder why.
Because they want to get their money back, and then they want to hold a fire sale and put Chrysler up for bids.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, you know these mortgage deals where they renegotiate the mortgage, you know, change the terms of the mortgage so people have a lower payment. So they can stay in their house.
Mm-hmm.
That they've been like, that Bank in California has been doing it. And the lady wanted to use TARP, and they basically told her to go jump.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I found out a little piece of information about that. The banks are demanding they be paid fees up front for this. What they're very carefully not telling people is that all of the equity that these people have in their homes disappears.
Gets liquidated. Sure. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right into the bank's pocket. So, you see, they can't lose. They're making out like...
The house never loses, Susan.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
Anyway, you have a nice...
All right, and say hi to Donald for us. Stay away from the wall.
I shall attempt to.
Okay, because if I get to it, I got another story here later that'll probably make you want to run at it. But that's a...
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Gird up, yeah, gird up thy loins. Yeah, I know.
Get the Valium out.
Take care, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. And we'll keep that... Well, a quick email rolling in before the next phone call from... our buddy Kate from everywhere. She says, this isn't all entirely about Warren. This event goes a long way to confirm my initial reaction to this person. He's a slick-talking, preacher-sounding, empty-suited con who conned the sheep who needed a savior. He isn't a change agent. I'm sad for the folks who are so invested in his victory. And this has brought racism to the top like lumps of chicken fat on a pan of cold dumplings. My jaw is locked, my stomach clenched, but I am not surprised. They will prove to all be snakes. Some are prettier than others. Some kill sooner. Some you can't see coming. Kate and Dixie. Yeah, Kate, I know.
Hello?
Hey, Juanita.
Hi. I think Solomon had it all over David when it came to wives and concubines.
Oh, well, yeah, but David, my only point is that David wasn't exactly a one man and one woe man kind of guy either.
No, but you know what? I always thought.
You know, and he did take her up from Gilead, and lo, she did become one of his concubines.
Oh, yeah.
One man and one woman. There's not, you know.
What did they get the 5,000 years?
Because that's how old this idiot thinks the planet is, Juanita.
Do you think he really believes that?
Sure, he believes it.
Playing to the choir.
No, he believes it, you know, because a belief is a lie that you tell to yourself.
Yeah.
He doesn't, well, you know, he doesn't know it. But, you know, he believes that giving a donut to a gay man makes everything right with the world.
What I was wondering about that was, why did he give him water? Why didn't he give him some coffee or something.
I like a little coffee with my donut.
Yeah, well, that, you know.
Maybe because it was all hot in California and everything. Give them water and donuts.
Okay, well.
Ice cold glass of moo juice goes good with a donut. Of course, me, I prefer a cruller anyway, but, you know, who am I?
Well, I think I don't like donuts, but when I start to eat them, I love them too much.
Oh, Lordy, that hot now sign used to go on at the Krispy Kreme, and it was all over.
Mm-hmm.
You got a Krispy Kreme anywhere around there? You know, they got that neon red.
We've had a little bit of everything. Now we're getting new banks. Brand new banks. There's one of them. We didn't know what we thought. Maybe it was going to be a restaurant of some kind, or you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, banks
and
look like
Wachovia.
That these days.
The other day, it's Wachovia.
I thought they were broke.
My bank. I did too. My bank. In fact, they haven't had their opening yet. They're just finishing the building of that Wachovia. But my bank is across the street, and then there's another bank right beside it. And then down the road, they're building another bank that I don't remember the name of it, but they've have, you know, they let you know what they're building. So I don't know what's going on with that. But they don't want to help people out to,
but
know,
unlike the Krispy, unlike,
home.
Right, unlike the Krispy Kreme, they're not going to have a red flashing neon sign that says money now, money now.
No.
Like the Krispy Kreme has the hot now sign.
Yeah. But I swear to you, and that's been since the payoff, you know, the, what you call it,
the
step out, the tarp.
The heist, you know. The heist?
Yeah, heist. How about the heist?
Yeah.
But, yeah. But getting back to Rick, you know, Warren beats me. When I heard that, I thought, oh, brother. I was listening to Mark talking about it, and I agree with him that people like that are more dangerous than somebody like unlovable. Who's the one that looks like Rose and Star?
Yeah.
Family thing.
Oh, Wildmon or no.
No, the family in Colorado.
Oh, Dobson.
But they say that Warren is getting some heat from the right wingers, so maybe Obama has.
Well, maybe they'll be able to get him off the podium.
Maybe.
Because you know, if Rick Warren thinks that it's going to hurt, if he thinks it's going to hurt tithing, he'll hear his mother calling or need to spend some time with his family or something, or come down with the flu.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, you know, that's like our senator. He's quitting because he needs to spend more time with his family.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he had a little bit more elaborate way of saying that. So now your president, the resident, the pretzel-dent, he says his brother sure would make a good senator from Florida.
I know. And remember, the signs will only say Jeb. You won't be able to find the word Bush on any of them signs. Just Jeb.
Yeah, but,
Jeb Smith. Jeb Jones. Aren't you Jeb Bush? No. I mean, you know, ask him three times before the cock crows. No, I ain't no Bush.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah, I'm the smart one.
That's like when what's the name of the place that went totally under and people lost their pensions out in Texas?
Yeah. Oh, you're giving me a workout tonight, Juanita. Enron.
Yeah, Enron.
Sorry, I'm wore out. I'm a little
oversleep. You remember that Bush said that he didn't really know him that well?
Oh, yeah. Kenny who? Kenny who?
Yeah. Well, also, so did Jeb. And a lot of the people's pension here in Florida was invested, you know, that worked for the state. They invested a lot in the Enron. And he's doing the same thing. I got the article here somewhere, too, and he's the same thing. Well, you know, I don't really know him that well.
Lord of mercy. And people, he doesn't know.
I hope that, yeah. And they're supposed to be like the best of friends. Of course, you wonder if that guy's even dead, you know, that kept the people from getting the...
Nah, he's living with Elvis.
Well, they kept the... They took away his... because he's supposed to be dead, they took away his conviction. And I can keep all the money.
Got to keep everything, right, exactly.
Yeah, and those people are out of luck. Well, they call SOL, you know. Places of our environment.
Yeah, right, and we know. Yeah, we know what that means.
Yeah, I want you to rest well. That yesterday Elizabeth said that the White House called her and said they were sorry that they'd overlooked.
It got lost in the mail. They were sure one went out. She was invited. That's that disingenuous kind of. Garbage that the White House is so good at.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the one hand, they said that, of course, she was invited. And on the other hand, they said it was inadvertent. Well, yeah. Was she inadvertently invited then? I'm just processing here. I've had two days of, you know, real intense processing. So I'm just trying to process here and figure out exactly what that means. If her lack of an invitation was inadvertent,
yeah,
then why are they saying she was invited?
Well, I think she was being something because she knew they were going to call her.
Well, of course, she used the public airwaves so she could make sure that, that's what the public airwaves are for, Juanita.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
The airing of petulant, petty grievances. Public,
yeah.
Man, that's some public service.
Yeah. Well, I sure would be interested in hearing you talking about some of the things that you learned.
I tell you what, I don't know if I could begin to do it.
Really?
But I'll have to try. And you know what I'll probably do is just sprinkle it in here and there. You know, just things about being cognizant of our language, things about understanding that some things are not for, because, you know, the right wing, well, that's not racism. That's not sexism. That's not that. And these are people coming from privileged classes declaring to people who don't share that privilege why their complaints are invalid, which is a further way of marginalizing them.
Yeah.
And to the extent that I do it, at least I'm on the lookout now for it. Because we all do it because the society that we live in is sexist, is classist, is regionalist, and is racist.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah, when somebody tells me they don't have a racist bone in their body, I just don't buy that. Because they may not think they have, but everybody's got something, you know.
Yeah, and it's a question of recognizing it and knowing where it fits. We have this beautiful little, very simple drawing, but just kind of a triangle on the middle of a page with some waves going across the very top, if you can imagine. It was an iceberg.
Yeah.
And the tip of that iceberg was individual racism. All right? That's stuff like, you know, you can't trust them.
Yeah.
Or that's just how they are.
Uh-huh.
They steal. You know, stuff like that. We've all heard it. And those are individual moments. But then just like, you know, it wasn't the top of the iceberg that took out the Titanic. It was the stuff that they couldn't see. You actually hit that before you ever get anywhere near hitting what you can see above the water.
Mm-hmm.
And that next level down, right below the waterline, that is that's institutional racism.
And you know, when you try to talk to people, they it's kind of like, you know, Kate was telling about, you know, when she was trying to tell them, you know, the woman said, I forget what she was trying to tell them, but it was about, you know, I guess a bomber or something. But anyway, she said that finally after she got through, the woman said, well, you just must not be able to sleep at night because all that information you have in you, I just couldn't handle that. I just couldn't live that way. And a lot of people are like that. You know, like my friend, she says, I guess she's my ex-friend. I haven't heard from her, but she said, well, you know, I have to just think they know more than I do, and I just have to trust them.
Well, and see, yeah, that's a mechanism by which we can, by which a person can sell out their own accountability, their own responsibility, and in fact, their own morality or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, that she, it, but I thought Kate did beautifully with that, you know, and but. She'll get somewhere with somebody. I believe that. You know.
Yeah.
It could. You never know who it might be.
All you can do is keep standing on the bank and tossing the pebbles into the pond and watching the ripples spread out.
Yeah.
The minute you quit tossing the pebbles is when you're guaranteed that you will not reach anyone.
But it's interconnected in a lot of ways. You know, especially now. The racism, you know, the white people. I don't know what in the world is the matter with white people. You know, the things that are supposed to stand up for our white people are racist. We don't have no place to go, you know, for help except somebody like that. And I don't like them.
No.
And never have. My folks never did. Thank God for that. But, you know, I'm not saying that I didn't live with prejudice. Yes, we did.
Sure you did.
But even my folks, you know, I was able to educate them a lot. And from what I had learned, you know, they were willing to change.
We only guarantee failure when we refuse in our own right to participate. Mm-hmm.
I truly believe that we need to grow to, you know, I call it my evolution is what it is for me. And I think that's a good word for it. It's like a spiritual and a mental evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about what I would miss if I had a mindset like I, you know, used to have. It would just be so empty. And, you know, I'm talking about them, people, white people saying, well, that's just the way those people are. What's interesting to me when you study history is how brilliant those people were in the way they did, you know, like they sang. They sang what they felt right in front of their masters. And they said, oh, that's so sweet. They're so happy. They're so this, you know. They just love to sing. And then they knew how to communicate. It was amazing when you think about it. How brilliant. And they know things that white people don't know to this day. That, you know, especially the ones like my age and maybe a little younger. And but they're very smart. You know, they survived. And some of them survived beautifully. And I went, when I used to go to the hospital, you know, of course that was segregated too. But you had the only jobs they could get. Of the women were like what they call nurse's aide, mm-hmm. or laundry, or in the kitchen.
Sure,
that's all of they, and they could not be in a charge of anything at all.
Well, you know, we can't have folks going into jobs that might provide them meaningful opportunities or ramps into the middle class.
Yeah,
and that's what's so important in this contemplation, Juanita, is that you don't have to have something as overt or crass as a "don't let the sun set on you here" sign, and a lot of times it is far more effective if you don't have that sign and you just let it work institutionally and just let it work within the culture.
At that time, you know, it was all segregated, and then the guys could only get, you know, jobs as a But what I was wanting to say was that I noticed that some of the kindest people, they were some of the kindest people. And I used to think, if I had been treated like that, I don't know if I could be that kind.
But Juanita, in many instances, there was no choice in that regard.
Well, but because I think some of them do have a good heart, you know, like
human beings have good hearts, but there are also bad human beings. You see.
Well, that's true.
When
you think about how they survived in this rotten mess that they came up in, and not just the people down south. You know, a lot of people.
Sure, it exists. Look, there is not a corner of this once great nation that does not have the putrefying stench of racism in it.
No.
Or
no.
Sexism or the heterosexism, not homophobia, but heterosexism. That's another one I picked up along the way.
Well, if we're going to deny people their rights, then why should they have to pay taxes?
Right. Or why? Well, I'll take it a step further because I'm a little bit nastier about it. If we're going to deny people their essential constitutional rights, then why are they not free? Jesus, see how hard it is to work with it. Then why is that same group of people not free to deny access and services to the people who are denying them their rights?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Why can't a gay physician look at someone who comes into the office and say, "How did you vote on Proposition 8?" And when that, I voted for it because I want to support the family, and just say, "Get out and find another doctor."
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's great. I think that's right.
Doctors, pharmacists, lawyers, architects, interior designers, waiters. I don't care where someone exists in society. Look at these bigots and say, "Sorry, can't help you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do business with your kind." And turn the tables for once.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I say I just couldn't really blame them. And for a while, I used to think like the Black Panthers, you know, were kind of like co-equal to the Ku Klux Klan, you know, and different. But they weren't. You study the history. They were helping the people out and all.
Well,
one
group was starting violence, and the other was responding to violence with violence of their own. And those are entirely, I eschew violence of all sorts, but one sort of violence is different from another. Even in the law of this nation and the country from which we drew that law, there is acknowledged the right of self-defense, and that is violence.
Yeah,
but I won't stomach or brook or advocate violence.
Yeah, but you can't blame people who do. Like the guy who threw the shoe.
Well, okay, yeah, the only violence that was perpetrated in that room was the beating that man was given.
Oh sure, but that he took a bigger risk. He is still alive, I believe, but I don't think they're through with him yet.
Oh no, he won't do that.
But
twice.
He will. He's gonna. The more they do to him, the more of a hero he's gonna be. But I wanted to get back to about what when I saw things changing as far as racism.
Mm-hmm.
Is through the hospital. Is that what was it that gives them a chance?
Affirmative action?
Affirmative action. People think that should be done away with, but that was a big difference. You got people in, they were able to get in, they had to hire them, the hospitals especially had to, getting all these funds from the government, and they turned out to be some of the greatest ones, and they had a right to be. And, you know, to have any job that anybody else could do. And I was working when all that started. I was working in a hospital, and that started really going strong. And I just think it's wonderful. But I know I'm wrong. A lot of people don't think so.
Not, well, but the people who don't think so don't have much sense. Well, Juanita, I thank you very much.
Yeah.
We've got a bunch of them. We got a bunch of lights lit up. I hope there's folks still on them.
And you have a good evening.
Oh, you too. And you know, I'll rejuvenate and rest and refuel. I'll be back tomorrow evening. We'll have us another high old time. All right.
Okay. You take care.
Take care now. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Now, just a reminder: if you're on hold, everybody's going to get their say. Okay. Promise. Swear. And we'll get this sorted out. We'll get this all sorted out yet. Hey, welcome to the program.
Ah, Brother Bob, how are we?
Brother Albert, how are you?
Well, I'm not battling negative 20 degree temperatures and 5 feet of snow and Minnesota drivers. My goodness gracious, what the hell's wrong with Minnesota?
Every state has a state bordering them in which people do not know how to operate automobiles.
That goes without doubt. I mean, we're sitting in the. In Minnesota, they don't use directionals and swerve in and out of lanes all the time. Like they constantly like to drive in the right lane, but they love to swerve into the left lane with no directional, and they never let you pass. Like if you pass somebody, they'll.
Are you also cursed with people who just get in the left lane, stay there, and drive under the speed limit?
I understand the whole. See, I drive in the left lane. I was, you know, growing up in New York, that's the fast lane. That's the lane I just prefer to drive in. I prefer to, you know, you get away with doing a little speeding. Nah, no 5 feet. I was just kidding. Anyway, you know, you get to do these kinds of things, and you know, like you just use your that's what your brights are for. You just click, 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 and they move over. You know, I mean, everybody knows. Ooh, good. Ooh, I am going here. You got to flash them. You got to let them know. Get out of the way. So, anyway, I know I've been away for a while, and I missed you.
We worry.
But I've been all right. My goodness gracious, I was so sick. But I think I've finally
had a, well, yeah, I can hear a little upper respiratory stuff going on in your voice.
Well, it's kids. You know how kids. Kids are little petri dishes that with a little mister that sprays out.
Little virus merchants.
Yeah, that's what they are. It's amazing. But you know, what I do love is
yours aren't in the public school system yet, are they?
Oh no.
Well, see, it's going to get even more fun once they are.
No, they probably won't be.
That's like the virus of the month club.
Yeah, no, they probably won't be. I hate to think that my kids would want to play with brats. Just that toy.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Well, you know, that toy is going away.
It should go away.
Mattel, not that I'm sitting here ballyhooing and rah-rahing for Mattel, but Mattel sued for trademark, copyright, all kinds of intellectual property right infringement against the purveyor of brats and won. That was within the last couple of weeks. And that probably spells the death knell of brats. And yes, I did a couple of ding-dong, the witch is dead, kind of danced a merry little, when I read that.
I'll tell you what, though, one of the best things I ever seen in my life, was that shoe being thrown in a bush.
I know.
That was just, you know, I feel bad the guy's probably getting tortured and everything else. And, you know,
that injustice
will have to be answered for. You know, the bills are coming in to pay for these freaks, and, you know, no matter what they try to do, they're never going to get away with it. So, I mean, you know, let them do crap like that. It's just going to further their punishment later on. But, you know, I mean, you know, when you see Gerald Ford slipping down and you see, you know, all these other, you know, presidential, you know, quirks and quacks and, you know, these guys failing and falling and all the other things that they like to do, you know, I mean, not only is that going to be, that's just going to be a complete and utter historical, like, monument to the whole entire Bush administration is a dude throwing shoes at him. I don't know.
Hey, look, that man displayed more courage than the entire Congress of the United States of America. How's that when you put it in that perspective? Isn't that just mind-boggling? That man standing in a press conference room in Baghdad had more guts in his one good throwing hand than Nancy Pelosi has in her entire body.
I know. And, you know, it's like, you know, well, what do you expect from somebody who's there on the ground? You know, somebody who's not isolated and, you know, shielded from the realities of this, you know, this butchering.
Right. And it was, of course, mentioned on Tuesday evening that the for-profit-only media, in their, as is their usual want, immediately watered down the whole thing. Well, he said, this is for you, you dog. And they never reported the second sentence. And this shoe is for all the widows and orphans.
Yeah, but we know this, and people know this. And I tell people, and I never fail to mention that. And sure, yeah. In the basic, you know, McDonald's world of, you know, of media, sure, you know, they're never going to mention that kind of stuff. But, you know, man, who the hell isn't going to get sick of McDonald's? Seriously.
I know.
Disgusting. Come on now. I mean, come on. So, you know, people are going to, I mean, right now, I already think people are there. You know, I know it's easy to be, you know, misanthropic regarding humanity, but, you know, I just really see that, you know, once you ignite the fire of learning and the fire of just truth, you know, I mean, you know, like all you were talking with Juanita about throwing pebbles in the pond, and you've certainly thrown your, you know, fair tonnage of pebbles, and I certainly never fail to leave the house without my pockets full of them. So it's, you know, I'd like to think that those kinds of things, you know, make a big impact on people and make people just, you know, sit there and go, wait a minute. There's something out there that I didn't know about that. And I mean, it's like, you know, not knowing about something is like getting something new. You know, I mean, getting real information versus, you know, pasteurized, homogenized, you know, cookie cutter crap. It's a priceless and invaluable addiction. That our freedom is totally dependent upon. And it's one of these things that the more they squeeze, the more people like you and I wiggle, waggle, and the more people like, you know, that other people will sit there and we'll get our little thorns that are, you know, out there.
Well, yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the squeezing and the wiggling, because you remind me, of course, of, you know, rule one when in the coils of an anaconda is don't struggle, because every time you struggle, he squeezes out a little bit more air.
Yeah, right. You're not supposed to breathe.
Yeah, right. But I just got this email in from our pal Sophie, and she says, I think this is the final straw with Obama. All I've heard all morning on the radio, liberal talk, you know, and bear in mind, she lives in a place where they actually get liberal talk on the terrestrial radio and so forth, is how we need to all wait until Obama is president to see what he'll do. And she says, I think if he's willing to do this, he's pretty much on board with all those DLC types he's surrounded with. I couldn't believe it this morning when I heard about Obama choosing this guy. I mean, is he toned? Is this a?
I heard that he doesn't have a say, but I don't know if that's true.
He doesn't have a say?
That he doesn't get to pick that kind of stuff in terms of the inauguration.
Who does? I mean, all the stories are Obama chooses.
Well, I hear you. And yeah, you know what? He can fail. He's allowed to fail. I hope he does fail, because I don't want the side of the aisle that we reside from, which is, I believe, the side of justice and reality and peace and above all others, the side of humanity that believes in the survival of the entire species. I don't think that we ever have the luxury, and as you said it many times, we don't have the luxury to sit there and go, oh, Obama's going to fix it.
No. The fixing is rather incumbent upon us.
Exactly. You know, I don't know what my hopes are for this dude. I mean, certainly, you know, God, I mean, any kind of bandage for the last 8 years of, you know, even a greasy rag that I pull off some zombie's rancid head is probably better than another 4 years of McCain. Or
well, sure. Like that. Now that's the other thing, Albert. That balance exists.
Yeah. That's sad that elephants weigh more, and so they usually win on the seesaws. You know, and they got their pockets full of stolen loot, billions and trillions and billions and trillions. Oh my!
Okay, but I'm gonna go back and make it a little worse, because I'm gonna go back to my he took a dive argument. If you look at Sarah Palin, which I'd rather not do.
Yeah.
It's hard not to come away from this realizing that. The Republican Party mailed it in this year. The Republican Party, the funding wasn't there. The excitement wasn't there. You know, they got the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing evangelicals out with Palin, but that just made McCain look a little weirder. This was a boat race, okay? The fix was in. I'm convinced of it now. And I don't, you know, look, Albert, I don't like saying this stuff. I'm not ratings driven. I don't have to create controversy. All I can do is get behind this microphone and do what my head and my heart tells me is right. That's the only thing that drives this program, and it's a luxury that almost no other broadcaster has. You know, there's not a list of words that I can't say that saying them will make the FCC get all sideways. And drop a $275,000 fine on every station that broadcasted it, the guy who broadcasted it, or woman, and the company that creates the programming. That doesn't exist for me. I have absolutely no constraints on me. I am free. I am brokered in the Ten Commandments and poor as Job's turkey, but I am free. And as a consequence of that, you know, I don't have to come out and say, well, you know, Obama's letting us down because I'm trying to figure out some way to keep the show going for the next 4 years and have something to talk about. This is not that. This is nothing but your honesty, your truth, my honesty, my truth, my facts, our facts, and the considered reasoning and rationale of everybody who shares their time to participate in this program. Either listening, talking, emailing, what have you. So with all that having been said, I'm not going to play the game of where we sit and wait for him to take the rubber mask off and go, oh, I'm really a liberal. Liberalism is good.
He hasn't been impressing me. No, he hasn't been impressing me at all. And, I mean, I certainly... I know I'm not the only one with buyer's remorse, even though, I mean, let's be perfectly honest, we knew this from day one. I mean, you knew this from day one. I knew this when I saw him give the speech for Kerry. Okay? And, you know, Hillary Clinton would be absolutely the same exact thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think she would. I don't think she would. I mean,
and
you know,
there's
and,
no
know.
Perfect candidate, and there's not going to be any perfect victor. Okay?
Remember,
when FDR was in office, there were a whole lot of people who thought that he was too weak, that he was not, that he wasn't moving boldly or strongly enough. The only reason we don't think about that is the fact that that generation is largely gone. But there was an entire movement around Huey Long. And he didn't want to provide the Social Security. He wanted to provide meaningful life money. And went around talking about, you know, every man a king, and wrote songs about it even, until, you know, he made it to the United States Senate and suddenly woke up one morning and got dead.
Yeah, he did.
But we don't think about that. So, I mean,
we're going to have to see. We're going to have to see. There's a lot of issues that have to come, that have to be weighed. You know, Obama's got a lot of crap on his plate, and, you know, we could say that he is a, you know, just another puppet, and just another this, and, you know, I'm sure, you know, nobody gets to that level, which is sad that I can say this, that nobody gets to that level of politics without being compromised. You know, without having some, I mean, you know, you just wouldn't. You know, and, you know, you got right-wingers all of a sudden. You got, you know, now we got stories in the thing. We got white supremacists everywhere. We got, you know, little kids with Adolf Hitler's birthday, and Rite Aid won't write the happy birthday Adolf Hitler, but Walmart will. And I mean,
didn't that just warm the cockles of your heart?
Oh, you know, yeah. Oh, you know I love that. Freaking Walmart. Anyway, you know, Walmart. I'm going to go get my, I'm gonna have to find some evil hero and whatever, and just evil bastard, and get some cake, see if they'll do it. But anyway, you know, I don't know, man. When he picked Rahm Emanuel, oh, no, everybody, oh, he's tough, oh, no, he's going to kick ass. Yeah, well, we'll see. I don't think so. I've never liked the guy. I mean, you know, what's to like about him? Well, Hillary Clinton didn't like him. Well, maybe there's something there. But just because she doesn't like him doesn't mean he's a good guy. You know, I mean, it's just, I think what it is if these people don't perform to the level that they're supposed to perform, I just think, I happen to believe that the consciousness that we represent is just not going to stand for it. I think it's a lot stronger. I think they may be taking us for granted. And if they're going to take us for granted, then, well, we're just going to have to regulate. You know, I don't see, you know, Head On with Bob Kincaid going anywhere. I don't see you going anywhere. You know, you're going to be, we need you. You're here. And that's how it is. I mean, we're not nowhere near done. You know, we don't have space jobs and, you know, and bridges and, you know, bridges across.
Oh, I know. The revolution is not here, and No one's dancing around the maypole. Whether Head On with Bob Kincaid goes anywhere, well, the only where that this show can go, Albert, is away.
No, that's what I'm saying. You're not going anywhere. You're staying.
Cross your fingers and send out some faith waves, will you?
I'll send out everything I can. But, you know, I mean, when we talk about everything that we do talk about on here, you know, it's, you know, the glitter and the gold, you know, it's going to lose its luster. And it just happens faster and faster. So I really, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know what Obama's doing picking this Rick Warren guy. I have no idea. I'm sure that there's some strategery there.
That's the thing. Yeah, I'm willing to give him the 12 moves ahead on the chessboard and the Obama, you know, the Obama Obama Juan Kenobi mind trick. Jedi president mind trick. Maybe that's what it is. But, you know, this is, frankly, where Rick Warren is concerned. How do I put this, Albert? There are some people and some situations in which one does not play those games. One does not, because, you know what, you can play the Jedi mind trick on a couple of sand people, all right? But you cannot play the Jedi mind trick on a Sith Lord, all right? And Rick Warren is a lot closer to Sith Lord than he is Sand Person.
Well, if he's so close, then
I'm truly betraying my geekness, aren't I? I'm so in touch with my inner geek. It's not even funny.
Well, if he is such a power in regards to this, then he wouldn't do it. But the fact is that these people that do these Rick Warrens, these right wingers, these guys are attention whores. They'll take anything. Heck, you could whip them like the Christ in the Passion, and they'll still do it. It doesn't matter. There's no level. These people have no shame, Bob. They have no shame. Wait till Reverend Ted Haggard tries to make a comeback. They all always make a comeback, don't they? Jim Jones would make a freaking comeback if he could.
There's always somebody out there that'll believe.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, these people have no shame. They'll continually come back. They're like zombies. They just keep coming and coming and coming, and they never stop, and they just keep coming, and they want more brains, and, you know, and sometimes
feed me more brains.
That's pretty much what they, that's why I call them zombies. You know, people laugh at me when I talk about the zombies. They think I'm really, and God, wouldn't that be great? That would be easy. You know, if it was real zombies, that'd be, you know, something that anybody could deal with. I'd have fun that morning.
Who knew that Romero was breaking out all profit when he made Night of the Living Dead?
Well, exactly was. I mean, that's, zombies are, the metaphor of metaphors. I mean, well, you could fit them into anything. And, you know, I just do see that the consciousness of people, I mean, overall, is seriously betraying this. I mean, I was actually watching an interesting documentary, as usual. That's why I got to start posting these so you guys can watch them. I was watching one, and it's called Everything's Cool. And it's regarding the global climate change and this and this and this, and how in 2004 it was like basically not an issue. And, you know, it was funny. There was, you know, they had this van and it said, you know, basically global warming, but it was like that show? I never watched it. The one with the wheel and Diana Gray or whatever her name is, and Diana White, you know, the one with the Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
And they had it, you know, spaced out like that, and it basically was the word global warming. It's like, you know, do you think, you know, more dangerous than weapons of mass destruction and all this other stuff? And so they had people, you know, reading it, and you see, come on, guys, more dangerous than weapons of mass destruction? Come on, that's anti-American. You know, and, you know, you had to laugh at jackasses like that because he's just a pure jackass, you know? I mean, are you trying to tell me that complete and utter climate collapse is going to be more dangerous than those weapons that Saddam had? Oh, yeah, please, come on. How could that be? Anyway, you know, basically what happened was is they kind of followed for a while the guys who wrote Environmentalism is Dead. And what they wound up doing is they wound up making these different types of focus groups, and they're sitting there talking to people throughout, you know, throughout the documentary, and they're sitting there, and as, you know, to more recent times, I think they stopped filming in 2006, so that's about as far as it's come in terms of this, you know, this vantage point. But what they were really doing is they were just sitting there talking to people and saying, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And it's like, you know, a lot of times you can't sit there and come at somebody and say, you know, like, hey, do you think marijuana should be legal? Because of all the other things that that brings up. But if you sit there and you actually sit there and you bring up a topic to say, do you really think we should arrest 1 million people a year for possession of cannabis? A plant that literally has never killed anybody. You know, if you sit there and phrase a question a certain, just a different way, not to be like, what's his name, Eric Luntz or whatever that scummy bastard is, but in order to take a page out of that playbook, to use his weapons against him, to sit there and, you know, like, you know, use the, heck, you know, I'll tell you what, Bob, if you and I were on Okinawa, you bet your ass we'd be using the sandbags the Japs lifted up if we needed to. And that's the same kind of thing that we have to do against right-wingers and that whole mindset. We have to use the you know, their bulwarks against them. You know, we're never going to sit there and, you know, and I hope to say that we're never going to just sit there and just sit there and hold our ground. Just, you know, just to hold it, just to kill, just to, you know, say, well, we have an abortion as an issue, or, oh, we have, you know, all this other crap that these bastards try to say, you know, that just spins us and leads us nowhere except, you know, keeps them in power. You know, I hope we never wind up doing that. I hope we'd be more gracious than that on this, you know, the golden path or whatever you want to call it. But, I mean, we are at this, you know, people were talking on the chat room, they're talking about, you know, different types of technology that we can use and different this and this and this. And I just got to state that I believe, especially, you know, we talked about the solar technology that, you know, that the stuff's developed. I mean, it's not only developed, but it's developed to the point that you know how it's fabricated, right? Remember? It was a freaking copper, blah, 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 crystal shot through a laser beam, copper crystal laser beam shot through some hexane gas, and that rendered the silicone into black silicone.
I'm still blown away by it.
Okay, exactly. See, we know how it... I know how it's made, the heck, how hard could it be? I mean, then you talked about the nanotechnology spray that, you know, utilizes all that. So if you're sitting there thinking about this, heck, and Obama wants to create, you know, that's another thing that this movie was about, the Everything's Cool. You know, if he's talking about creating, you know, 5 million new jobs, I mean, we're talking 5 million new jobs. Okay, and that's new jobs. You know. We know, and we talked about this in terms of the bailout and the auto this and this and that. And you know how I feel about it. I hate to think that the Republicans co-opted my feelings on it, just because my raw nut natural gut feeling is to take those pigs at the head of the trough of these, you know, General Motors and Chrysler and Cerebus and all this other. I'm trying to be good, Bob.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know,
I
to sit there and these bastards, these pure scum. I want to see them gutted.
Well, no, you mentioned Cerberus. Look, there's one way to deal with this aspect of it. Because I am struck by just, you know, if nothing else, Albert, the irony of the fact that they want exactly as much money as they paid for Chrysler in the first place, and just haul them back in front of Congress, haul the entire Cerberus board in front of Congress, Senate, House, joint session, don't care, and have the clerk of the Senate or the House, don't care, walk up and place a piece of paper in front of each member of the Cerberus board. And that piece of paper says, we, the members of the Cerberus board, do hereby, being a private equity firm that is not tied to the stock market and none of that stuff, we do hereby swear, affirm, or avow that we will not sell for any amount of money the Chrysler Motors Corporation for the time during which the pendency of this note is due and owing. We swear this under penalty of perjury, and sit there and watch them sign it and notarize it on TV and say, okay, well, we'll cut you the check now, but we know that you're not going to just use this to, you know, to do a fire sale with Chrysler and screw the UAW workers that we're trying to save anyway.
Well, I totally agree with your point. If you get some Fannie Mae money, right, for your house, right, whatever one it is. If you get that first time home buyers, blah 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 blah.
Right.
You can't leave your house or sell it for a period of time. I think it's 2 years. If we have that as little.
Yeah, you can't kite first time home buyer homes.
Exactly. So how can you sit there? And I mean, that should be just that. If you ask me, that should just be the way it is. Like, you know, that's the minimum that should be. I mean, you know, like, anytime that anybody talks about billions of dollars, billions, Bob, billions. You know how I get with billions. You know,
it's a word that's come to just make me nuts.
It does. It's billions. My God, it's freaking billions. I mean, and you know, so when they talk about billions and trillions, it just drives me absolutely bonkers because, you know, when we're looking at billions of dollars, and they would think that they're going to get this to bail them out. Hell no. I hope to think that the people that are running this union nowadays, and I don't have too much faith in them, but I would like to hope that these people would take these blinders off in terms of their glasses. Really, really think about uniting, you know, and akin to how those unions unite around the world. And literally, you know, understand, you know, where they have been co-opted and where they have actually, you know, sold out in a lot of respects. I mean, this has to go without saying. I mean, they need to come to terms with their debt. I mean, I don't understand how these people can sit there and run around. Me personally, Bob, if I ever say anything to hurt your feelings, let me know. Don't let me. I mean, I know this is this is more on a personal level, but it's always the micro macro. You know how that is. I mean, this is anybody. You know, if you're in a relationship with somebody or anybody, you know, your friends or your brothers or your family, and you know, let's say one day you're drunk and you're cranky, then you say something that, you know, you didn't mean to hurt them. You just said something that you said. Why the hell would you want to let them walk around thinking, oh my God, he's such a jerk, or blah, blah, blah? You have these debts out there that are so high and so expensive. Why don't you want to pay them? I mean, why wouldn't you want to pay these things off? That's kind of what I'm, you know exactly what I'm saying. I mean, when we talk about.
But, you know, Albert, it's that whole Fitzgerald Hemingway conversation from A Movable Feast where Fitzgerald looks at Hemingway and says, the rich are very much different from you and me. And they are. And frankly, one of the things that most differentiates the rich from the working class is the approach to debt. Wealth enables and ennobles debt. Wealth ennobles, frankly, Ponzi schemes. And let me just call a quick timeout here, Albert.
Okay.
I want to get this said and go ahead and take my lumps for it, because I will.
All right.
I have not 10 cents worth of sympathy for the people who got ripped by this Madoff horse's ass. Okay? One, if you're doing business with a stockbroker whose name is Madoff, you're not getting it, you're earning it. I once refused to go to a doctor who was recommended to me He was a surgeon, a guts doctor, and his name was Tornwall. And I looked at the guy who was the doctor who was referring me to him and said, "Oh hell no! I'm not playing any games with karma. That's entirely too serious." So one, there's people doing business with a guy named Madoff.
Yeah.
Two, I am if I have any truisms in this life, Albert, that I hang on to with almost religious fervor, it has got to be Fields' first law. And we've discussed this a number of times. You can't cheat an honest man. Fields' first law.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks that he's going to make 10% a month and that return on investment is legitimate is essentially and fundamentally dishonest. And as a function of being dishonest, Fields' law says you may, in fact, cheat him.
Hey, those are the rules.
Makes sense?
It makes sense to me. I mean, exactly. How do you feel bad? How can you feel bad?
I'm not hating on these people because they were stinking rich and had hundreds of thousands of dollars to play with. No. I am unsympathetic toward them because they were essentially trying to game the system. Nobody in their right mind, no financial advisor, at least theoretically, with a caveat being the first 30 minutes of Mark Levine's program, in which he laid it out, as he always does, these financial things, very, very clearly, cogently, and sanely. No financial advisor would look at a person and say, "Oh, you're going to get 10% a month? Sign me up." Because we're not talking about high-minded economic principles, Albert. We're talking about principles like, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Multi-level marketing crap, Amway stuff.
Yeah, no, don't invite me to your Amway party. I don't care how damn good the detergent is. I ain't coming.
No, friends don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, with that having been said, and somebody, well, you know, they didn't mean to get cheated. They were just, no, because the way those things spread is that somebody comes to you and says, "Yeah, man, I got this great opportunity. You got a couple of hundred grand laying around? Well, yeah. Well, quick, come with me." And then they lay it out while you're riding in the car down to the bank to take out the life savings and everything. And all along the way, that's when the dishonesty kicks in. Because all of a sudden you're thinking, I can make something out of this that it ain't. I can have stuff for nothing. I can have more money for free.
I mean, but Bob.
But when that stuff starts blinking inside your brain, if you don't have the little angel Fred Flintstone on your right shoulder, whispering into your ear what the countering what the little devil Fred Flintstone on your left shoulder's doing, then that means you have a fundamental flaw inside your conscience. You've got a broken, busted conscience, and you are about to earn what you're going to get.
That's right. And I think the real beauty of this, the thing that strikes me is, you know, when we talk about, you know, people that have a couple of $100,000 laying around, you know, not for nothing, Bob, because this is how we are. This is you and I here talking. 10%? You want 10% of $200,000? Man, there's a factor of greed that drives me nuts regarding this. You know, it's like, you know, when you hear these Republicans talking about, oh, we can't have taxes, oh, we need less taxes, you know, it's because they're making, you know, $500 million. $500 million. How much do you need? You know, and I hate to say, and I hate to sound like a raving, you know, Marxist or anything, but How much is it? How much is it that you need? Why do you need to have, why do you need to have your 10% returns, 20%?
What is it out there on the planet that you can't have if you've got $500 million?
Or 250. You can't live on 250. You can't live on a quarter of $1 billion. What do you need? Do you need an aircraft carrier and a submarines and nuclear weapons and everything else? What do you need? What do you need for $250 million?
$250 million will not buy you peace of mind. Neither will a half a billion or three quarters or the whole billion itself. And that in this relentless chase for acquisition is what is born therein. It is what the chase itself is symptomatic of, Albert, and that is the fact that these people have holes in their souls. Okay? They got broken consciences, they got holes in their souls, and they can't find nothing to patch it, and whatever is left is still leaking out. So, and they are left husks.
Yes, true. But that is my big hope for Obama, is that he isn't one of these. And you see, like, one of the things like that really struck me as just unbelievable, I don't mean to fly around too much, but you know how I am.
Fly.
Is when Bush got the shoe thrown at him. I love that smirk. He was like, hey? Like that frat boy smirk, that he had. Like, this guy's doing what to me? But I loved his
response. Here comes another one.
Yeah, not the second one. Man, ooh, that second one. I could see the heel just boom. But Maliki saved the day on that one. At least from the angles I saw.
Skate save, short side.
I'll tell you what, I do want both of them on my dodgeball team because Bush does have some move. He does have that first. That was good. I didn't expect him to do that. And that guy had two shoes off at Bush's head, and he wasn't aiming for his belly. He was aiming for his head, and especially with a little head like that, that's a tough target. And that guy had two shoes off. Thrown before I could get one off, so he would definitely be on the team. The Sam Bush just for his moves, and he's slimy, so he'd slick around the course. It'd be great. I miss dodgeball, but anyway.
Love the movie.
Yeah. But we would dodge wrenches. But anyway, when we sit here and think about Bush, when he said what he said, so the guy threw a shoe at me. What? So what does that mean? It's like, one of the things that people have...
The only person who says, so the guy threw a shoe at me, is a guy who gets shoes thrown at him every day.
Well, but the thing is this is the thing about Bush, and this is the thing about this class of people that we have to recognize. These people fly on planes with marble floors.
It really is that wonderful... movie time. It's that wonderful scene in that terrible movie... Where, played, in Jaws, played, the grizzled old captain. What's his name? Come on, help me here. Not Richard Dreyfuss,
I know who you're talking about.
Well, but
I think everybody's.
But in that terrible movie with the wonderful scene, the Battle of the Bulge, played the German Panzer commander, who has a captured chocolate cake. Mannheim. They are sending chocolate cake across the Atlantic Ocean. The Reich is doomed. When they have the fuel to fly the chocolate cake, there is no hope left for the Reich. Flying around, the same thing. Flying around in aircraft with marble floors.
Yeah. Well, they don't care what you think. They don't care how you feel. They don't care anything about it. And I hope this is one thing that I hope Obama, this is one thing like that. And it's going to be tough. Maybe it'll be really tough for him, but maybe I think they're banking because he's never had much. And anything that he has had, he's pretty much worked for.
Yea, verily, he is up on that high mountain.
Well, I know, and he does like to follow that, high road as well. And I hope that he is playing Jedi mind tricks.
Robert Shaw.
He certainly is. No, Robert Shaw, is that the guy's name?
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, he sits there, and, I think we can give, I want to give him a couple, or I'm going to give him 6 months, 6 to 8 months, okay? I'm going to give him that before I really just start unleashing on him. You know, but I'm going to give him that because that's the time that he really needs to, you know, show us that he is being president before he has to start running for re-election again. So, you know, we give him 6 to 8, maybe 18 months, and we'll see what he winds up doing because, you know, this market crap isn't done. This economy stuff isn't done. So, I mean, you know, if he really does, you know, do the things that we need to be done, you know, which is tie up the environment and the economy. He's going to fix the economy, and he's going to do it all in 1 week. Anyway, sorry, I can't help it. That scene pops in my head constantly. I love that scene. But, you know, he's going to do these things, and we're just going to have to, you know, I mean, Rick Warren, at first I thought they were talking Rick Isley, and I thought we were going to see, never going to lift you up, never going to let you down. But
No. Okay, I might have a bigger fit about Rick Astley than...
I just Rickrolled you right on the radio, live.
You did.
Rickrolled. Sorry, Bob.
Dude, you've been Ricked.
Oh, buddy. But, you know, other than that, it's, you know...
Other than that and the 5 feet of snow...
It's only, they're talking another 10 inches tonight.
It's been weird here. I was expecting us to get hit with ice and freezing rain and stuff, and nope, didn't happen. It hasn't dipped below, like 45 degrees. My winter coat is superfluous right now. I had my Hood Cooley A Louder America t-shirt. With a flannel shirt over it today, and it was almost too much.
No, I need that just to be on my computer.
Yeah, see, yeah, right.
But you know what's awesome? I'll tell you what's awesome about living in the tundra. I'll tell you what's up, Bob. You know, I got my computer fixed. I got it all working. Da, 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 da. 250-millimeter fans on the side of it. What I did was I made this ghetto vent of cardboard from my window to my computer box, and it goes along the wall, and I've got it hidden with blankets. You can't tell. But it's in my computer room, which is my room, you know, and that's, you know, everybody's, every man or, you know, with a wife, everybody's got their own little space, be it a garage or whatever. My computer, after running a game or whatever I run, you know, for, you know, a couple hours, you know, intensive stuff, my CPU's sitting at around 23°C.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
I don't mind the cold too much. It just makes me feel like every day I ride my computer, it's like driving a new, brand new, fresh oil change every day. And that just gives you peace of mind.
Well, hang in there, Albert. We're going to roll along. You got the lights lit.
All right, let's get it rolling. All right, you take care, buddy.
Hey, keep feeling better.
I'm going to. I'll chat with you later.
All right, bye now.
All right, Bert. Yep.
Our buddy Albert in the deep snows of far Wisconsin. And let's see if... Nope. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, Gonzo, greetings. What's going on,
Bob? Hey, Spike, what's happening, brother?
Not much. Just having a little fun with pneumonia and had a labor hearing today as well. So when it rains, it pours, or snows.
Yeah, you're up to your eyeballs in bliss.
Yeah, so... We'll see. Everyone that I tell, or my mother was there as an eyewitness too, you know, they all seem to think that sounds like I might have actually won today. I won't know until I get a written settlement. What I find interesting, the best part of all is the lawyer basically only got to see the case itself 15 minutes before they went in. Because now, if they're getting me, it's only a matter of time before they start doing this to everyone they're laying off. They got like a team. Or not a team, but there's a private contractor, I guess, they've been hiring to hire lawyers for them to dispute all labor issues. So the labor hearings throughout this country where Starbucks are closing in large numbers are going to be overloaded with basically paid-for corporate lawyers to fight the working class.
Yeah, on salary as opposed to retainer, sure. Yeah. But you know, I'm not trying to put a gloss on it or anything, but thank God you are where you are. Thank Flying Spaghetti Monster, you know, pick a deity, that you are where you are, because, you know, if you were in South Carolina, you would be bad screwed. Our buddy David's from South Carolina just updated me on a story he's been sending along, noting this dumber pig-licking bastard wants us to starve. He's going to stop our unemployment checks even though they were approved by Congress and signed by a fellow pig-licking bastard. Can't we do something about this? Thanks, values voters. And David writes all that, Spike, because, here's the lead line. South Carolina's fund to pay unemployment benefits is running out of money, but Governor Mark Sanford hasn't decided yet whether he'll ask for federal help.
He better, because I used to run with James Hilton in the ARCA series, and he's based out of Inman, South Carolina, which is outside of Spartanburg.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, if the economy starts to take an effect on the foreign makers that are in the South, places like Spartanburg are going to be just ghost towns, essentially. I mean, Spartanburg used to be a textile town. Now it's become more of a automotive manufacturer.
Yeah, well, you know what? They make those BMW SUVs there, and don't they also make the little Z3 Roadster? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that place was built specifically for the Z3 Roadster, which actually I just got to mention, by the way, actually probably one of the better cars BMW has. It's actually of recent. It's come out. It's probably one of the cheaper BMWs to maintain, probably because they've mass produced so many of the parts in this country. Sadly, it's in a right to work state, so maybe they're not getting paid as well as they could be, but
or should be.
Or should be, exactly. But, so certainly that state's going to get hit hard. Pennsylvania's going to get hit hard. We're all going to get hit hard. It's interesting we're about to learn that many states didn't prepare for worst-case scenarios, and we shouldn't be surprised. We went to war not preparing for worst-case scenarios, so this has been an ongoing...
Yeah, how do you do that? How do you do that? You're a general, you're in charge. How do you just assume that... What successful general... In the history of this very, very warlike little planet, has ever not, deemed great, i.e. successful, has ever not prepared for war without considering, the minute the first shot flies, everything's gonna go nuts, sideways, all kinds of crap's gonna go wrong. How did we not do that?
When the military operates in a system of do as you're told type of instructions, it's hard to dissent your difference. Since really the military is not a democratic atmosphere, and I don't mean like Republican democratic. I mean democratic. There's no democracy. It's a dictatorship. You're dictated to from the top down, and of course the ones who go the highest are the best at following the orders from the dictators. Kind of case in point, actually, probably the best case in point you could have with that is Colin Powell, who early on he was the only voice we heard about that even when they were planning, saying, you might not want to think best case scenario. This could become a disaster and then you're going to be stuck with it. Of course, that was brushed off. I forget the name. Said something publicly and then was, forced to pay the price.
Yeah.
Basically, you really can't say much. Powell is probably the one that got away with the most because of his name recognition. But even he could, he has to go in line with what they say. And that's kind of how the military operates. It's just sad that the dictator was just so clueless. It would have been nicer to have a slightly more intelligent dictator. We'll have a new one in place soon enough, I'm sure.
Kind of already do. I mean, when you throw a shoe at a guy and your punishment is you get taken off to a secret prison and get internal injuries, your arm broken, and your nose smashed in, that's not exactly a sign of a flowering democracy.
No. Oh, of course not. We should know that. I mean, come on, they look at the lynching they did with the previous one. It looked like something the Ku Klux Klan cooked up. That wasn't democracy either at work. That was just a good old-fashioned lynching just with Middle Eastern people instead of white people. And no burning crosses. I think that maybe the more interesting notes out of the shoe incident is the fact that it was the Iraqi prime minister's detail that got him before the Secret Service. And I'm not sure if this guy had something other than a shoe.
That's the question that Dookie over at MorningConstitution.com asked the other day. Would you have stood around while a third shoe flew? Do you have a protocol for how many shoes? You know, these questions being posed to the Secret Service, of course.
Yeah, I don't know everything about the Secret Service, but I'm vaguely familiar with what I've heard from someone who was a member of the Secret Service. It used to be my uncle's neighbor, so this comes from like stories from my family. But basically, I guess the Secret Service, what it is, it isn't so much you have an allegiance to one particular president, you just have an allegiance to the office of president. And I wonder if, because he's become such a blow-off towards the end, and clearly just, he doesn't, I'm almost out here, I'm not doing anything. He's really just taken it so unserious that at this point his detail has so little respect for him. They're not even paying attention to him enough. Someone's thrown something at him? Jeez. Too bad we missed that since he hasn't been doing his, you know. So I wonder if maybe...
Secret Service was just kind of sitting there slack-jawed going, it took this long?
I wonder if they're kind of sick and tired of him at this point, you know. And I think... What I wonder is how many Secret Service, when you're no longer president, you don't get the big detail once you become former president. You get Secret Service protection for life if you so choose. I wonder what's the max guys you can have around you at one time, because if this guy who's a reporter is throwing shoes, what about the radicals in this country who want to get even with him?
But that's the thing, Spike. The Bush administration has been but terrified of radical peaceniks in this country from day one. You know, that's why the free speech zone for any given Bush event is somewhere in the next county.
Yeah. He's not going to have the level of protection he has now.
Remember, one of the first most telling anecdotes about the Bush presidency occurred in your beloved Philly, I do believe. On the 4th of July or something, when he was in a rope line shaking hands, and a guy shook his hand and said, "You are a terrible president." And Bush looked at him and said, "Hey, who cares what you think?"
Like he left the guy
hey,
on the ship.
That was, you know,
eventually
that,
it's going to become serious.
Yeah, but the thing is, he said that to the one guy, but to the same extent that the guy in Iraq said, "This is for all of, you know, this is for you from the widows and orphans." You know, when Bush said, "Who cares what you think?" He wasn't just talking to that guy. That was his philosophy for the entire country.
Yeah. No, that's it's been his lifelong philosophy. You know, he grew up in the charmed life. You know, who cares about
George, I really don't think you should be putting those M-80s up those frogs' butts. Who cares what you think? Give me another frog.
I mean, it's going to come back and bite him in the ass somehow. So, you know.
Well, you know, the bite in the ass comes when he's toward the end of his roads and days, and he has to look up and realize that it's all been a waste. There's been no meaning to it. There's been no purpose. That his only contribution to during his time on this planet has been a contribution of misery and blood and death and broken bones and blasted families. And that's when you start, and that at the end of life, when one of those drops on you, that's when you start hearing the fluttering bat wings around your ears. And the bat wings are going to flutter for George.
I guess we'll see if who was less popular with the crazy people of the world post President Henry Nixon.
Nixon went away and minded his own business until David Frost dragged him out onto the world stage. George Bush isn't going to go away and mind his own business. There's already talk out there about his. They've got a picture of him superimposed over Martin Luther King Jr. in the new Bush comic book museum that his Saudi pals have paid for on the campus of SMU. Dig it. George Bush superimposed on a picture of Dr. King.
Well, it's,
kind of makes you feel like terrible. Your brain's just turned into cottage cheese, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a pretty terrible Photoshop, I'm sure. It's, that's the best person you could have found to Photoshop Bush on. Freaking idiot.
I know. Spike, I hope the litigation works out real well. I'm going to try to hit a couple more of these blinkers here, but keep us abreast. When do you expect a decision?
Well, it's coming in the mail, so who knows? It is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, so that might be a lot. Anytime you got to deal with anything involving the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, it usually takes longer than you want.
Still holding out hope for your beloved Finns?
Yeah, I think they're going to go all the way and make win the AFC East, actually, and that'll be kind of cool considering they only had one win last year. But hey, real quick too, did you catch that story about the skinhead with the kid named Hitler?
Oh yeah. I was gonna do it. I was looking forward to doing that story this evening, but since Olbermann carried it last night, I figured everybody had already heard it.
Yeah. Well, by the way, if anyone goes to my blog, they'll see that those of us near where it happened, we broke it before Olbermann a long time ago. Actually, the Express Times, the same paper that Dan Tilley wrote that letter about it, the Iraq War that got the Secret Service to come and bother him,
yeah,
is the one that did that story as well.
Well, you know, if your local ShopRite won't put Happy Birthday Adolf Hitler on the cake, you can always count on Walmart.
Yeah, and I used to work in the same shopping center as at Walmart when I worked for Starbucks, coincidentally. So, if you're ever in Phillipsburg, New Jersey on Route 22, that's the ShopRite that refused to do it. I've been to that ShopRite several times since it's right over the free bridge from Easton, Pennsylvania.
Walk over, find the manager, shake his hand, and say thank you.
Yeah, so if you're ever in Phillipsburg, New Jersey, Route 22, right next to the big cork and bottle liquor store, is the ShopRite that did it. So there you go. And kudos to them. It gives better memories to ShopRite in Phillipsburg, New Jersey.
You know, I think, just out of curiosity, I'm halfway tempted to go in my local Wally World and see if I can get a Happy Birthday Satan cake for Christmas.
Well, you know, I think in all fairness, too, there's probably a good possibility that he probably caused trouble once before at Walmart, and upper management probably told whoever had to direct decorate the cake, do it or it's your job because you're refusing to serve a customer. So I got a feeling someone's going to be scapegoated out of that store over that who probably didn't want to do it in the first place. And I'm thinking the Nazi wasn't smart enough to get the newspaper to do this story. I'm thinking whoever got forced at Walmart to do it probably contacted the paper and told them their story so that maybe not. Maybe the skinhead is clever enough since he named his kids like that to do that.
Well, that's the one thing I couldn't figure out. Was that a misprint in the paper or did that moron misspell Himmler?
No, I believe he did. I mean, come on, he's a Nazi from Warren County, New Jersey. I mean, he's not even a Mercer County, New Jersey Nazi, which would be Prince.
There's a continuum? I don't want to know if there's a continuum of Nazi stupidity in New Jersey, Spike.
Well, you know, Warren County is a more rural redneck county in Jersey. You know, at least if it was Mercer County, he might be a little more clever. You know, he'd be with those society folk who wear shoes. But
now, I took that moment to get a little sip of iced tea, and I'm about to gag now. Cause
yeah, no, he's from the Phillipsburg, New Jersey area. By the way, Phillipsburg, New Jersey is the big rival with Easton. So, you know, if you're from Easton, even if you're an adopted Red Rover, you got to love when essentially someone who's a product of the Phillipsburg Stateliners school is a neo-Nazi naming his kid Hitler and stuff. I mean, it really kind of plays to why he...
Well, he couldn't spell Hans. Hanslin Hindler?
Yeah, well, my favorite was the Jocelyn Aryan Nation Campbell. Talk about... there's four words in there before you get to the last name, basically. But there's only two... There's only a space. There's the first two connected, then there's the second two connected.
That's the way that's the only way you could make it fit on the little square blocks on the birth certificate form. You only get so many blocks, Spike.
That's true, and I've seen forms.
Cut a skinhead some slack.
How it happened. Yeah, but the world will end and New Jersey will be the same. I just want to say this further proves my theory. New Jersey is where the world is going to, everything that's going to kill this world and end society is going to happen in New Jersey. You know, War of the Worlds might have been fictional, but it was foresight. You know, same Kevin Smith did that Dogma film. New Jersey is where the world will come to. Any state where you can't make a left turn without paving an entire road for it because you can't figure out how to make a left turn light arrow on your lighting system without confusing everybody in the road. just don't get me started, Jerry. I had warrants for my arrest in Jersey. You know, I grew up in Pennsylvania. But whenever I go to New Jersey, it's like I'm in another universe. Things go wrong for me all the time. My ex is from Jersey. Jersey is just a bad scene for me. The only thing Jersey has to its credit is cheaper booze, but that's because it's all crappy wage shops there. It's not like here where they're state employees. So, yeah, I'll take the socialism.
Yeah,
liquor stores here, and people are getting paid a little better.
Yeah, you know, it's worth another buck and a half on your bottle of Evan Williams just to didn't know that the guy behind the counter might be living halfway near a working class life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, same thing with tomato pickers in Florida, and, you know, no, Taco Bell would have to raise the price of a taco 4 cents. Oh, well, you know, we'd go out of business.
Yeah, well, that's why I go to community-sponsored agriculture kind of place, you know, farms that sell their own stuff, because it's competitively priced with the stuff in the store and of a much superior quality. It's just a shame I live in Pennsylvania, so we only have so many months to enjoy that. So I wish I was someone in, like, Southern California where that's a year-round thing you could probably do. But,
well, Spike, yeah, good hearing from you, and I look forward to our next conversation.
So do I, and I just to finish it up, I just gotta say, man, what's that smell? Oh, it's New Jersey.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say what's that smell? Oh, it's the new Burger King meat scented cologne. Oh,
I'm a big fan of Burger King, but I have no interest in buying cologne from them.
Ew.
I'll stick with the flame broiled burgers themselves.
Take care, Spike. Later. Our buddy Spike Rogan from PA. Look him up on the web. I believe it's a Blogspot blog. Look up Spike Rogan, Rogan. And let's keep things jumping and hopping right along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, welcome to you, my friend.
Reverbo!
Hey, that'd be me.
How are you?
Well, I'm hanging in there. I'm, you know, all the money that used to be over here is now in, of course, in China and Saudi Arabia and Japan. And if they wanted to, they could just go buy New Jersey outright.
If they sort of haven't already. I mean, they hold the note.
It'd be okay with Spike, it sounds like to me.
Well, I think it'd be okay with Spike if they went ahead and dug the ditch and took, you know, just anchored it a little south of Taiwan.
They may just do that one day. We'll wake up in the morning and discover that China had bought L.A. And I don't know if anybody would care. Oh, God.
I know.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't the Cerberus, wasn't that like one of the, wasn't that that three-headed devil dog?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now, once you get in, you cannot go out.
Oh, it guarded the exit, not the entrance.
Well, the exit and the entrance were one and the same.
Okay, but you could.
Yeah. He was more. He was, if I remember my mythology correctly, he was more accommodating about letting you in.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense. They always are. So all our friends down in there, Milton Friedman and Dick Nixon and all of them, they're in to stay as far as...
Right, and well, you know we've got another a new one on the spit, don't you, Reverbo?
Who might that be?
Hell called one of its own home today.
Oh, really?
Yes. 66 years old, we may now refer to Paul Weyrich as the late Paul Weyrich.
Now... Fill me in, dial me in on Paul Weyrich.
Paul Weyrich coined the phrase moral majority.
It's that guy?
Paul Weyrich helped found the Heritage Foundation.
Oh, Oh, there's a special room waiting for him down there.
Paul Weyrich filed a lawsuit to prevent Wiccans from practicing their religion on U.S. military bases. Paul Weyrich once wrote on his website before Easter that the Jews killed Jesus.
God, he has an impressive resume. It probably didn't, they probably didn't take too long discussing whether or not he can get in.
No. The barbecue spit was ready and oiled. He's slow roasting over a hickory fire right now, and little demons is slathering the bread with barbecue sauce.
Boy, that resume goes right to the top of the stack. A young man, too. I guess he got a lot of work done in a short time.
Let's see here. Until the Army withdraws all official support and approval from witchcraft, no Christians should enlist or re-enlist in the Army, and Christian parents should not allow their children to join the Army. If the Army wants witches and Satanists in its ranks, then it can do without Christians in those ranks. It's time for the Christians in this country to put a stop to this kind of nonsense. A Christian recruiting strike will compel the Army to think seriously about what it's doing. It really.
I don't know what to say. Things have sure certainly tipped the other way. I don't hear that much anymore. Do you, about this whole Wiccan problem in the military? It seems to have disappeared.
You kind of can't have a whole this religion but not that religion. Of course, being a military, I don't think it has any business with any religion in it, seeing how a military, by its very definition, is engaged in the violation of virtually every religious the religious structures, religious tenets, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, tell them that at in Colorado Springs.
Oh, I know, at the Air Force Academy or at Focus on the Family. Sure, yeah. Go ye therefore and take up thy machine gun and follow him. Hallelujah.
Boy, I can sleep better at night knowing that just that tidal wave of Wiccan influence in the Army is now at bay thanks to this man.
And he did.
Well, I guess he did. Well, I don't know. You know, all this talk of devil dogs and I think zombies came up earlier.
Yeah, we've had zombies.
And that got me to thinking about eating those raw squirrel brains that they like so much in your state and mine. And
that gravy is to die for. Raving mad. Die raving mad for. Yes.
Put you in that holiday spirit for sure. And so speaking of madness, look, I don't know what to say about we got to give Obama. We just can't let this early stuff bother us. There is a method to their madness. When you get to that level of power, none of them do anything by accident.
But Reverbo, is this not, this is, I mean, I'm sorry, it's just because of who I am. This is playing with fire.
I don't like it either, but if you're going to make mistakes and play around like this, at least do it in the beginning.
Right, but isn't there something in there, Reverbo, that isn't your face stinging just a little bit from the slap?
I'm giving him a pass because I volunteered half a year for this guy. There's people up kind of scratching their heads about a lot of this guy and his appointments and his decisions, you know, lately, but I don't know what to say. You know,
well, CNN is telling us, Reverbo, that Obama says the choice of Warren reflects a diversity of ideas.
Yeah, I gave a donut to a gay person, the Rick Warren story. I mean, I gave a seat to a black man. Of course, it was a seat in the very back, but it was a seat.
I gave a drink to a whole bunch of black folks, Bull Connor.
Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, Chateau Lafitte, but it was Thunderbird Counts, I guess.
Well, you know, I don't want the Chateau Lafitte if it's coming at me at 500 pounds per square inch.
Yeah, I don't. The thing that really bugs me about it, too, is when you hear that guy's condescending laugh when they're
Yeah, it's a knee slapper, me hating the gays after I've been hating the gays so hard.
Yeah.
Golly, Ned.
It didn't sound phony at all. Golly, Ned, indeed. Oh, God. You know, in a way, this sort of comes around. This touches on the people who have been talking about what's going on in Detroit. This sort of took the thunder away from that a little bit. But it's almost kind of the same thing, because you've got, it's just, once again, it's like a human rights question. It's a constitutional rights issue. The senators, the people who are actually trying to suggest that, in other words, instead of including everyone in the advantages that they have, they just basically want to take away rights from working people. They want to take away, you know, what they worked so hard to get with their union. They want to just, like, completely trash them.
Yeah, well, they frankly want to get all Pinochet on it and just disappear it.
Yeah, they don't, and then when they bring up something like, well, you know, our president-elect wants to kind of get everyone in the country, you know, on board with the same health plan that they have in Congress, somehow or other they sort of skate out of that whole issue and go, well, yeah, I don't know about that, but those people shouldn't be making, you know, $20 an hour on a, you know, doing line work for Chrysler. And I'm just thinking, huh? Well, you just want to, and the people in California, they just want to take, and these monkeys like Rick Warren, they just want to take away. They don't want to add. They want to take away.
Well,
it's sad.
I was listening to National Petroleum Radio as I was driving down into the Colt River Valley, and I heard an interview story with a woman who works on the line for Chrysler at Kokomo, Indiana. And the story had not yet been released that the Chrysler's shutting down everything for 30 days. And she said, well, you know, I make $28 an hour. And went on to describe her life. I've never met a person who thinks that $28 an hour is a wealthy wage. Now, me, I've met people who wish that they could make $28 an hour.
It used to be.
Yeah. But,
well, I mean, I don't know.
Go ahead.
I remember when I was growing up, your friends' parents in the 60s, you'd know someone who were making like $50,000 or $60,000 a year, and God, they might as well have been millionaires.
Yeah.
A Christmas tree in every room, they had an aluminum tree in every room in the house.
Hot dog.
No, I mean, you know what I'm saying.
No, I do. I do know what you're saying.
$20 an hour, $30 an hour. $20 an hour is not even $40,000 a year. And if you had a family to feed and car payments to make and mortgages to make, you're not putting any money away anymore on that. That's nothing.
And of course, whatever you're making, you are assaulted and daily seduced, Reverbo, by the need to go out and spend everything you got. Oh, well, what? You're making a decent wage? Well, why aren't there 5 42-inch big-screen TVs in your house? You might turn away and miss something.
Yeah, you might. I mean, I'm not here to, I mean, everything is over, everything is crazy. College, the cost of a bachelor's degree in college is completely outrageous. I'm not here to judge whether or not $25 an hour is too much or too little to make on an assembly line, just as I'm not here to, I don't know if 100 and, what a congressman make, like $130,000 a year?
That's close enough for government work.
I mean, I don't know if that's too much or too little for them either. I just know that they used to say that the difference between a GS-1 and a GS, what's the president, like a GS-20, is like the president makes like 25 times what the guy who cleans the bathrooms at the White House makes. And that used to be classically considered like having a balanced economy.
Yeah.
And now, of course, you know, the president of Goldman Sachs makes 500 times more than the guy that cleans his bathroom. And So
let's let the toilet stop up at Goldman Sachs and see which person is more valuable.
Oh yeah, I mean it's just so crazy, like kicking around these people who are trying to work and make money, kicking them around like a football. It's
infuriating.
It is. And it's not that like unions are like should be put up on a pedestal anymore. I mean, I just don't know. It's a dicey thing, and it's just one more in a whole series of just total craziness that's going on here. Speaking of that, this guy Greg LeRoy, he's great.
I got your email, and I was actually going to bring it to the program later this evening. So you went and researched some of what he has to say?
Well, it's just what your friend David K. Johnston said, that they're taking us for, well, they're taking all the counties and the states and the cities for a ride, and evidently they're just, what I don't understand, and you're going to have to explain this to me, at this point I would think that there's enough testimonials out there from public officials who have been scammed, so that they kind of get their eye out for this now. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how you got somebody up in the pocket somewhere. You got to be making out like a crook in order for this to. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Promise to bring jobs and I bring jobs, and I promised this 30 times, and I don't bring jobs ever. Well, you see what I'm getting at here?
Yeah, I do.
The county commissioners, when nobody's looking, do does Walmart just stuff, $1 million in the guy's back pocket? I'm trying to figure out how this works.
I am sure that it would be unsafe to say, Reverbo, that never happens. That, palms don't get greased. Though, money is the grease on the skids of political corruption. But the other thing is, don't discount the value of magic words. Or the magic word.
Oh, yeah, you like can, those magic words make 10% year after year, those magic.
Well, it ends up in roughly the same place, and you can also apply Fields' first law to it as well. But the magic word in this circumstance, Reverbo, is jobs. All you have to do, all a person has to do, is walk into a county commission meeting or a city council meeting or a state government, a meeting with the governor, and whisper that magic word, and it does not matter, with very few exceptions, it does not matter what the jobs are. You say jobs, and harps play, and the air gets a little cooler, and a cool mist blows through the ventilating system, and there's an aura, and jobs.
And their eyes glaze over.
Look at how just by comparison. You want to know
jobs.
You want an idea of how of the profound level of impact that the Coal River Mountain Wind Project has had? I've been talking about it for months now. Well, a lot of other people are talking about it, too, and writing about it and blogging about it. Dig it. That job, that project, posits 200 rock-solid jobs that don't require anybody to do evil for 2 to 4 years in the construction phase, and then 50 rock-solid, good, perpetual jobs forevermore thereafter, and more as the industry grows. Well, as a result of that, my congressman had to run out, and I mean run, in the middle of this recession, depression, whatever, and he declared recently that 300 good jobs was coming to McDowell County, West Virginia, turning our coal into liquid. And there's going to be good jobs. Now, bear in mind that McDowell County, West Virginia, or Mingo, I forget which, Mingo, is one of those places where you can't drink the water anymore. because they've already ruined all of it. Now, it takes between 3 and 8 gallons of fresh water to turn coal into gasoline. And you can't fix the water after you've broken it in the process. But that is the effect that the Coal River Wind Project had, because suddenly one of our political representatives, who represents far more, you know, Massey Energy, Peabody, Consol, the extractive constituency, if you will, had to hustle out. I mean, yesterday, hustle out this boondoggle plan in one of West Virginia's most benighted counties to further benight it and use that magic word, jobs. We continue to blow up mountains in West Virginia because of jobs. Never mind the fact that you can destroy 1,000 acres of ground with a demolition crew of little more than 12 people. Never mind that. They're jobs. There are less than 5,000 mountaintop removal jobs in West Virginia, but if you talk about eliminating it, well, what about the jobs? Jobs is the magic word, and when that siren song is sung in front of a commissioner or a governor or a legislator or a congressman, you can see the strings on Pinocchio's arms. And he don't want to be a real little boy anymore. He's happy to have them pulled.
Well, just add that to the list of why things suck so bad. I was, you know, when my eyes were glazing over was when I was reading Leroy's concept, well, the one that sort of makes sense, where instead of the corporations playing the public off against one another, maybe it works the other way. Maybe the states play the corporations off and say, well, maybe you're just not good enough to incorporate in our state to move in here. I mean, you know, the way it was supposed to be. You know, what are you bringing to the table? We have a nice standard of living here in my state. We have good schools. We have a pretty decent college educated population here. What are you going to do? How are you going to add to that? And I was just thinking, damn, wouldn't this be great? And it's just, I'm back to that word. It's just so sad. Here it is, Christmas and 1 week away, and I got to listen to shows like yours and get all upset and read about this kind of crap now. And then I'm dealing with devil dogs and possum brains. Or was that squirrel?
Squirrel brains. Possum goddess. Careful. Watch the hypocrisy, will you, Reverbo? Or not hypocrisy. Right. Not hypocrisy. Blasphemy. Sorry.
Blasphemy.
Heresy. Yeah, that was the H word I was looking at. No, we do not talk. We do not talk about her brains.
No, we can. No, this is true. It's very true.
Yeah.
But I mean, human rights and constitutional rights and transparency and opacity, and my eyes are glazed over here. I got another real interesting quick topic here.
Okay.
That it's just something that we're always touching on, and that's the if you look at the way countries and civilizations and societies are structured. Actually, a friend of mine, a guy I used to go to high school with, does this now for a living. He's filling me in on this stuff. You've got your rules-based societies, and you have your relationship-based societies. And it's much easier to do business in and to exist in a civilized way, and obviously in a rules-based society where there are laws and everything is structured around, you know, in other words, you can't, in the United States, we can't prevent corruption, but we can provide consequences for it. Well, at least that's what it says on that piece of paper.
Right.
So, and in societies that have a relationship-based system, well, those are the kind of places where, you know, the last name of the people in charge never changes. Now, don't stake Kennedy and Bush and these people. Don't make fun of this idea. That's like places like Greece or the Congo or Colombia, right? Places or China.
totalitarian places where it's really hard to figure out if the information you're getting is correct. It's really hard to figure out, you know, things are done on a handshake. People get dumped off by the side of the road, this sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
And I got to thinking that the problem with our country, damn it, the problem is that at the very top, we bring George Carlin into this too, at the very top of our lovely rules and law-based foundation and structure is this damn relationship-based bunch of good old boys who make it impossible to get anything done. Like, the oligarchs are, they don't follow the rules. They seem to be so slippery, and they got the get-out-of-jail-free cards. You know, we're all down here trying to run the show.
There's a club, and you ain't in it. Yeah, George Carlin.
You ain't in it. And it's like, this makes it, you know, this is the essence of the problem here. We've got, at the top, it's running like a third world country.
You bananas know? For yeah. everybody.
And the names of the people in charge are the same, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
And they are. And so, yeah. Gee, I love calling this show.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
But isn't that, it's wonderful thinking about that and how important information is and transparency and all this stuff that you take for granted when you've got laws and you've got rules and procedures, right? And I can't stop you from suing me and I can't stop you from stealing from me. But at least we can take you down.
Right, because that'd be lawsuit abuse.
Well, you can't have that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
This just rolling in from News Ninja Gene. He says, Reverbo, you're smarter than you may know you are. Two Brown University economists have created a new data set explaining differences in the world's current per capita gross domestic products. In a National Bureau of Economic Research working paper, Louis Putterman and David N. Wheel introduced a world migration matrix showing that inequality among countries can be largely explained by where the ancestors of each country's people lived some 500 years ago. What matters is the history of the people who live in a country today more than the history of the country itself. Wow.
Damn. Well, I only steal my stuff, so I only steal from the best, Bob, as you know.
Well, the fact that you can steal without knowing your... Man, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that deserves, like, a cape and theme music.
No, I want a blazer. I want the head-on blazer. We talked about this. I want the whole
yes.
head-on... The membership kit, right? The duct tape and the lawn chair and that and the package of hot dogs and the whole thing. And the blazer, I want that blazer so bad.
Yeah, but we'll have to treat it like the Masters at Augusta National. You can have but you know you got to keep it. You got to keep it on premises.
I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking.
It's what they fall on their knees and pray to Holy Prophet over. Please don't smarten up the chumps. Please don't smarten up the chumps. Because, you know, that's Fields' third law. Right after never give a sucker an even break.
I thought there's a sucker born every minute. Because I'm telling you, yeah, jobs and the word drugs and the word freedom, these words have become meaningless, really.
That's intended.
You were talking about little Fred Flintstone supernatural characters on your shoulder, and one of them is saying, don't do this. Don't bring Walmart here. There won't be any jobs. We tried that 50 miles from here. Listen to us. It'll never work like they say.
Yeah.
What is the other little thing telling this guy or this woman? Is the other little one going, oh, but maybe this time it'll work?
Yes. And that is the definition. And that is, of course, the definition of insanity. Repeatedly doing the same thing, expecting a different result.
Oh, God. Well, I don't know. I'll tell you, though, I've been to Walmart. And, you know, Bob, the prices there are cheaper.
Really? I'm so going to Walmart. It's gonna be a real stinker to do, but I'm going to Walmart and see if I can get a Merry Christmas Satan cake.
I wish you luck. I really do.
And the thing is, I'll call the manager over. Hey, man, you did Happy Birthday Adolf Hitler. I got to have Merry Christmas Satan.
Christmas is really less.
Because Possum Goddess would be lost on them, Reverbo.
Yeah, it would be. And Christmas.
They do not understand her.
Christmas is like St. Patrick's Day. You know, on Christmas, everybody is on the cake, I think. And Satan should be there. And the Cerberus and the whole gang.
Well, the Mormons say that Satan is Jesus' twin brother. You know?
Wait a minute. Satan, what, wasn't there some battle? I vaguely remember this. How did Satan end up in spoon feeding Milton Friedman those silver dollars in the first place? How did he get out?
he got uppity. But it's vaguely referred to. But you know, the best even after he got promoted or demoted to Satan, depending on your view of the circumstances, he still does brunch with God. Go read Job. God's sitting down at to his celestial lunch. And I mean, Job makes it very clear. And Satan comes up, and God goes, "Dude, where have you been?" And Satan says, "Here and there, wandering around about the face of the earth. What'd you see?" "This and that." You know, he's cagey, Satan.
Yeah.
And God says, "Well, did you happen to see my servant Job? There is no more righteous man on the planet." And Satan says, "Oh, I got you righteous. Let me drop some boils on his ass, and we'll see how righteous he is then." Now, here's a guy that God has just described as the most righteous man. And God says, "You know, that sounds fun. Do it." Actually, he starts out and says, "Do anything you want, just don't harm him." He's actually being that merciful God that they're always talking about. So Satan goes down and offs all his kids, kills his goats, kills his sheep, kills his camels, kills everything that Job, you know, literally all of his sons and all of his daughters ain't dead. And he won't curse God. So, you know, it's lunch a week later. How's our little practical joke going there, son? "Well, he hadn't cursed you yet." "Well, but that's because I really haven't hurt him yet." And God rubs his little beard and chin and stuff. "Well, you know, you may be right. That might be, Rabbit. That might. And it's okay, you can hurt him too. Just don't kill him." And so drop some boils on him. You know, nobody wants to speak to him. He's got terrible body odor. And his wife comes up to him and says, "Why don't you just curse God and die and get it over with?" And it goes on like this, and we're supposed to be happy at the end of this because God restores to him new sons and new daughters and new camels and new goats, and Job is apparently so morally and psychologically and emotionally stunted that he's perfectly happy to have his old dead children replaced by new live children.
You're making this up.
Nope. It's all there in print.
But nobody really believes this, right?
Every fundamentalist on earth.
No.
Yippers.
They ought to do a movie about this.
Yeah. What do you do? Hey, God, what are you? I'm having some lunch. Try the barbecue. Nah, I got all I can stand. Yeah, sure.
Oh, my. And the moral of this story is this is the turn the other cheek.
That's the thing. This is if you read it correctly, it is the earliest piece of existential literature in human understanding. Because Job finally gets fed up, Reverbo, and he says, Hey, God, what did I do wrong? You know, he's got the boils and the agony of psoriasis and the trauma of, you know, he's got, it's just, God is really, you know, Satan and God working together, they're hell on skin diseases. I mean, think about the leprosy. And so Job's going, what did I do wrong? And God answers him in a whirlwind and says, who the hell are you to ask me? Were you there when I created the earth? Were you there when I created all the life? Shut up. And that's supposed to pass for an answer. And Job is apparently happy with that answer. Well, I'm a dick. You know, and goes along with enjoys his new kids and same old wife that was out there just rubbing his nose in it. Why don't you drop dead? God didn't love him enough to, you know, drop a piano on her head.
Boy, how do you even know when you're crossing this crowd? I mean,
well, that's the thing. You don't. And you don't know when you're not, because he didn't cross them. He did not cross God. God did it to him because it's fun. God told him, I did it because I can. You know, just between us, I love my wife very, very much. And every now and then I'll sneak up on her and give her a big old kiss. And I'll arm's length, and I'll look at her and say, you know why I did that? And early in our relationship, she goes, no, why? I said, because I can.
Well, that's no wonder people when they're in love thank God so much.
Yeah, and that's what, hey, Job, you know why I let you get boils? Because I can.
Because, and it says here, I believe it says right here at the end of the Carlin piece, why he can. Because they own the blanking place. It's a big club, and
you ain't in it.
Actually, it's a small club, but
yeah. Don't you love when you pull the two loops and the bow just sits there in perfection? Just great, big, gorgeous loop, and it's all tied together.
You know, you have made such strides, I think. Think about where you've been. And, I mean, I wish I'd have had you in Sunday school. I mean,
are you kidding? I'd have been burned alive.
God.
I'd have got rebounded. There would have been a persistent rainstorm of holy water over my head. Please, won't you burn him now?
God, you'd have been sizzling, just like they throw in the vampires. You'd have been.
Oh, my kids love it when we go take a road trip together. They've got to where now they say, Daddy, tell us another Bible story.
Oh, man.
Well, kids, today it's Job. Oh, we love the Job story, Daddy.
Oh, and they love that one.
Is this the one where God craps on one of his creations just for the hell of it? Literally?
How can you have a religion where you're constant, you never know when you're going to cross, where you're going to cross them. You never know when you're going to get, is the word smited or smote?
Smitten.
You never know when that's coming down.
He smote, they have smitten.
They have smitten. And also, I don't understand the point, and I will get off the phone here with this. If we're just born into sin right out of the gate, what's the point of all this testing and smiting and stuff?
Well, you know, that's why I've got a little more respect for, even though they did the human sacrifice and all that stuff, the Mexica people, the brand new baby, sponge it off a little bit, hold it up to the sky and say, welcome, kid, you were born to suffer and die. At least they're honest.
Well, if I don't talk to you next week, it's been a pleasure discovering your show, all of this stuff. Have a real Merry Christmas, and I hope your family is well, and don't forget always to make it personal, and I will, I'll be back.
All right, sounds good. If you're going anywhere or traveling to see loved ones or anything, Reverbo, A, give them our best, and B, travel safely and know that we're thinking of you.
All right, thank you. Talk to you again.
All right, take care, my friend. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's see, no blinking lights as long as we've got a program going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Preston, how are you?
Doing all right.
Thanks for your patience.
No problem. enjoyed listening to the other callers. I wanted to mention, you know, regarding Rick Warren, there was another appointment made by the Obama administration today. I'm sure you noticed Democratic Representative Hilda Solis.
Yes, Labor Secretary.
Solis.
And is being roundly applauded by organized labor.
Yep, definitely. She'll be replacing Elaine Chao.
Oh, no one can really replace Elaine Chao, Preston. Nor would I recommend that anybody with a soul even attempt it.
Yep. Solis.
Yes.
Her history. Daughter of a Mexican union shop steward and a Nicaraguan assembly line worker. And in addition to being applauded by unions, I have a quote here from what says environmental groups noted that while in Congress, Solis wrote a measure that authorized $125 million for workforce training programs in areas such as energy efficiency retrofitting and green building construction. And Carl Pope, the director of Sierra Club, said, "We can think of no better person to help President-elect Obama implement his plans for an economic recovery fueled by the creation of millions of new green jobs." So, you know, there's some good things going on with the administration. Rick Warren, you know, I certainly appreciate people's anger over that and anger over Warren's support for Proposition 8. But I think even he is a mixed bag. I don't know if you're familiar at all with his work on poverty, and he signed a petition of pastors regarding climate change concerns. So he's more of a mix. You know, I don't think he's like a Falwell exactly. Maybe some commonalities with him that I don't like, but some points.
But, you know, with Warren, though, sometimes one bad apple can spoil the whole barrel. And you know, the gay business, you know, his, you know, I gave a gay man a donut, therefore I am absolved.
Right.
That's troubling in the extreme. I got an email from our buddy Kate a few minutes ago. Apparently, her bandwidth is holding up nicely. And she was, you know, talking about giving Obama a pass. And she said, that, you know, via Obama's selection of Warren, that Obama stepped on the throat of the GLBT culture. She, you know, and Kate's gay, Kate's a lesbian. She says the folks have no idea what this means to my culture. I've been listening to him for the past 24 hours. No pass, no way. Who's next?
Yeah, and I'm not for passes either, not for sure. And I share the criticism. Still, this Time magazine piece about him that I was reading about Warren, it said he is both leading and riding the newest wave of change in the evangelical community and expansion beyond social conservatism to causes such as battling poverty, opposing torture, and combating global warming. And I don't know what he said about opposing torture, but apparently he said something. I saw a movie last night called Torturing Democracy. They played it on one of the PBS stations here. And, you know, it kind of made me physically ill just to see how these people are being tormented in the most sadistic ways. I mean, it's like something out of the Dark Ages. Totally.
Yeah.
So to read today, I don't know how fervent he is about it, but, you know, that maybe Warren has said a few things against torture. Okay, I'll take that. So, again, no passes on what I disagree with him on. But still, seeing the whole person, I think, is important. Even with someone like Paul Weyrich, who died today.
Yes.
Tom Hartman plays off in that comment he made at a rally about how they want a small voter turnout. You know, we don't want a bunch of people showing up because that's bad for the alleged moral majority, and, you know, can't stand that stuff. But he changed in some ways. He was speaking less about that kind of thing and speaking a lot more about mass transit.
Well, yeah, and you know, there's there is that to be said. He was a big fan of trains, apparently, but also in the late 1990s, he remarked, "I no longer believe there's a moral majority. Had there been a moral majority, Bill Clinton would have been driven out of office months ago."
Interesting.
Tony Perkins, you know, the guy who is the front man for James Dobson at the Family Research Council. Now, Tony Perkins is the guy who, among other things, bought direct mail lists from David Duke. Speaking of Weyrich, Tony Perkins said he didn't over-intellectualize about Christians jumping into the fray. He recognized early that the fray had jumped onto us. You know, more of the phony persecution complex that the religion industry seems to thrive on.
Mm-hmm.
In his last column, he said, "It is the worst of times because conservatives appear lost and without a serious agenda or a means of explaining such an agenda to the public. But it is the best of times because conservative thinkers are generating ideas and proposals for a next conservatism, arguing that it will lead to substantive debate about the nation's core principles and its future directions." And you've got to wonder about a man like this, Preston. Are these people unable? Do they have cable systems that just didn't mention Katrina? That didn't mention the war and the occupation of Iraq? Because, you see, Paul Weyrich gets to take, must take ownership in that stuff. You know, he didn't just tolerate it. It wasn't silence is acceptance. It was overt, active advocacy for those horrors. You know, this is one of those, he's one of those small government conservatives. He was a pal of Grover Norquist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be some level of, if nothing else, historical accountability for that.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, yeah. instead, the New York Times obit, which, by the way, has a really, really disturbing photo of this guy taken earlier this year. The New York Times obit speaks of him. The first thing they say about him is that he coined moral majority. And that his death was announced by the Heritage Foundation, which was of his creation, and that the guy saying that he was instrumental in the development of conservative thought, of course, I kind of think that's an oxymoron, Preston, all of that, but nothing in regard to the overt, deliberate divisiveness that he didn't, he didn't inject it, because an injection is a small amount. He pumped it into the body politic of this country.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Speaking of, you know, back to Warren real quick, one of his influences was Peter Drucker, who's kind of this management guru for the corporate world, worked with GM a lot and others, and did a lot of analysis of management and also the vital role of marketing in kind of creating movements and businesses and stuff. So I think another critical way to look at Rick Warren and what is he developing with that mega church, is it more like a business, you know?
But, well, what he's doing is he's taking Dominionist, I've made some study of this. He's taking Dominionist ideology, and it's like serving up a cobra wrapped up as a fuzzy bunny, because, you know, he doesn't do what the other fundies do. He uses some of their buzzwords. You know, there he is talking to Ann Curry on NBC, talking about how millions of people will be made miserable by gay marriage. But he doesn't grab the rest of the vocabulary and go to town on Leviticus or Deuteronomy or where, you know, "and a man shall not lie down with a man, and let him be cursed as an abomination if he do," you know, that stuff. Instead, he sort of, if you want to work with another name from the religion industry, he takes He takes the pop psychology approach of Robert Schuller, he of the Crystal Cathedral, and then turns and sort of warms it up and fuzzies it over and throws in a smattering of prosperity gospel.
Yeah.
And in many, but at the core of there is always this business of the dominionism that exists. And that is it is disturbing in the extreme, and that's why I find this man's presence on the podium so very, very disturbing, because it is playing with fire, and it's not going to advance Obama in any way, at least by my estimation, but it will certainly play to the advancement of Rick Warren. Because this will provide the presidential imprimatur so that he can not only take up the mantle of Falwell, he will now also take up the mantle of Billy Graham.
I think Warren's hosting of that debate did that as well. I think Hillary and Obama, and then later McCain came out and he asked them all questions about their faith and feelings about abortion and stuff like that. Although, there again, I think that was one of the places where I was surprised at, I thought it was a much more useful gathering than I thought it would be. And they took questions from the audience, and in the audience were some really progressive people. Not Cornel West, but someone like that. Jim Wallace may have been there. And some other people got to ask some.
And but that's another thing. Shall we assume from this appointment or selection that Jim Wallace said thanks but no thanks? Is Jim Wallace not competent or not holy enough to lead this invocation?
That would have been great for sure. Or even better, or at least as good, would have been Father Roy Bourgeois.
Roy Bourgeois would have been a good one.
Right,
frankly, as I mentioned earlier, and I apologize for not being able to remember the gentleman's name, the Episcopal bishop from New Hampshire who just happens to be gay.
Yeah.
That's a much more positive signal of inclusion and tolerance in this country than a man who, despite the good things that you have mentioned, must certainly be called to account for the division that he has sown within within the culture in which he has made a fortune in California.
Yeah, yeah. Really quickly on Peter Drucker, something useful that he said, and I'm not a fan of his work, but he did say in a 1984 essay that CEO compensation should be no more than 20 times what the rank and file make, especially at companies where thousands of employees are being laid off. He said, this is morally and socially unforgivable, and we will pay a heavy price for it. Again, I don't know all of Drucker's story, but to take parts of these people's story and try to push them out there into people's awareness, you know, I think it makes it easier for us to have those conversations at the kitchen table or at our workplaces where we're not constantly, you know, arguing with people from the right wing or kind of insulting people who may have gotten the purpose-driven life by Rick Warren and in a time of need got something out of it. And maybe it's misguided, but still, there it is. And how do we talk to people like that? And
well, every now and then in the doctor's office, I will have a long wait because I have a very busy physician. And, of course, this being here and here being West Virginia and this being where I live, there is a copy of The Purpose-Driven Life. And maybe it's because I'm jaded, Preston, or maybe it's because of the spiritual flaying I took as a fundamentalist. But I've read a lot of that book. And, frankly, I don't know what people get out of it. It's pablum. It's worse than pablum. It's like religious cotton candy.
Yeah.
You know, you can eat a bunch of it, but it won't fill you up, and it darn sure won't nourish you.
Right. Right.
Because it seems like the entirety of that book is an absolute rejection of the introspection that the Gospels call on the unexamined life is not worth living. That Plato tells us, and you know, you got to remember the early Christian fathers grandfathered Plato in. He was a Homo Christianicus Naturaliter, a naturally Christian man. In other words, a guy could be a Christian without Christ ever having been born. They said that, really. I think it might have even been St. Augustine.
Okay.
But none of that's in that book. It's all, you're good.